go.
Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Seems like it's been a while, so let me just say welcome to Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Conversation Radio like, well, that means it's radio like nothing else you're going to hear. A conversation among folks who know what they're talking about, have a lot to say, and refuse to be muted. Conversation Radio. And being Friday on the Front Porch... Oh, and what an early summer Friday on the Front Porch it is. It is utterly beautiful outside here in, well, you know, barring the obvious. It's beautiful here in almost level West Virginia. So I look forward to a very pleasant evening. I love these early days of summer. It'll still be light outside when the show is done. You know, that was one of the things that sort of blew me away about being in the upper Midwest. The broad daylight at 10 o'clock, that kind of thing. It's just kind of neat. It almost makes me want to run off and see, you know, the midnight sun in, I don't know, upper Sweden. How would that be, Scott from Sweden? It's got to be pretty dramatic. I'd love to see it. Or maybe somewhere north of St. Petersburg in Russia. Something in me thinks I'd prefer Sweden. But it was just wild. But it'll still be light here when the show is over at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. It is Friday on the Front Porch, and Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn means that we have an opportunity to sort of relax and consider a wide variety of topics, as it were. And range pretty freely over the information space, the information universe, if you will. So come on up, by all means. Kick your shoes off. Relax. Reach over the jug. The one with the corn cob stopper, that's about 140 proof over there. If you're not up for that, there's lemonade and sweet tea. And we'll just relax, conversate, enjoy the warm weather, the smell of new mown hay, and the honeysuckles blossoming along the banks of the road across from the porch. Friday on the Front Porch. But, you know, when we sit down at the porch, we remember those who aren't with us on the porch. And there was news today that is worth remembering. An individual who has gone on that journey from whence no man hath returned. I'm speaking, of course, of Peter Falk. One of my favorite actors. Died today at the age of 83. And so we'll raise a toast to the life and career of Peter Falk, an amazing actor and apparently a pretty decent human being as well. I read the New York Times obit of Mr. Falk. Of course, they have these things in the can for years and years and years, just waiting for the day when they run them. It's part of the news business. But there's a quote in there, and there's a certain relevance about Mr. Falk. There's a quote in there from a review of Columbo, his eponymous role, his defining role, There's a line from a review of Columbo by critic Jeff Greenfield, writing in the New York Times in 1973, in which Mr. Greenfield wrote, "The assurance that those who dwell in marble and satin, those whose clothes, food, cars, and mates are the very best, do not deserve it." Wow. I read that and it just sort of jumped out as a reminder. The assurance that those who dwell in marble and satin, those whose clothes, food, cars, and mates are the very best, do not deserve it. And how apropos that is as we find ourselves here in the early summer of 2011. With spoiled brat repiglickins running out of budget discussions, budget negotiations, because they're unwilling to bend on the question of whether people making over $500,000 a year should actually have to pay taxes? Apropos indeed. You know, I've been thinking a lot lately about the repiglickin insistence that our betters not pay taxes. And while I'm not necessarily at that burn baby burn state, I've come very near to reaching the conclusion that maybe the repiglickins are right. Maybe the rich on all right wing in saying that perhaps the repiglickins are correct and the rich don't need to pay taxes. Because I don't think they're going to want to hear my rationale. And what is that rationale? Well, it's simply this. Taxes are something that Americans pay. Taxes are something that people who love this country pay. Because if you give lip service to loving the country and, oh, daggum, NBC done screwed up the Pledge of Allegiance. Well, I can't believe it. I ain't never going to watch NBC again, bunch of liberals, communists. Well, if all you can do is bitch about the Pledge of Allegiance, then odds are you're not much of an American. Because the same people griping about NBC and the Pledge of Allegiance, we'll delve into that story a little bit later, perhaps. If that's all they can do, no, I'm sorry, that's not the definition of American. So maybe it's time that we, as liberals, progressives, decent people, give the little bastards their way. Let's tell the rich that they need no longer pay taxes. Hell, let's cancel corporate taxes. They're barely paying any anyway. How long is that list now that's been compiled of corporations that paid no taxes? And let's get on without them. Let's get on without them. Because one of the definitions of American is taxpayer. America is an experiment in pursuing the collective good. You know, from the Constitution, promote the general welfare. Right? Right. So let's just exclude the rich from the general welfare and the corporations. Of course, that means that corporations will have to build their own damned roads and maintain them. Corporations will have to find a source of their own clean water, as will the rich. And more importantly, and more to the point, the rich, who do not wish to pay taxes, well, won't they kind of be giving up their American citizenship? Couldn't you make a compelling argument that claiming one is paying, that having to pay taxes is onerous on a body, is a claim that citizenship is onerous on a body? I think so. So let's eliminate the tax burden for corporations and the rich in this country. And let's go on about our business of being Americans. It reminds me of that quote from Samuel Adams that occupies a prominent space over at Ben Birch's WhiteRoseSociety.org. Samuel Adams, in a speech at the Philadelphia State House, August the 1st, 1776, said, "If ye love wealth better than liberty, the tranquility of servitude better than the animating contest of freedom, go home from us in peace. We ask not your counsels or arms. Crouch down and lick the hands which feed you. May your chains set lightly upon you, and may posterity forget that ye were our countrymen." I'm pretty much there, aren't you? Let's tell the rich that they have no need to pay taxes ever again, and in the course of that, tell them that they are no longer our countrymen. They're something, but they're not Americans. No First Amendment rights, no Second Amendment rights, no third, fourth, fifth, sixth, on up all the way. No constitutional rights whatsoever, because remember, the right wing makes that argument, don't they? That only Americans are entitled to constitutional protections, even though the entire history of constitutional theory suggests otherwise. That doesn't stop the Republicans from making, benighted arguments such as they are wont to make. So let's do that. But let's make sure that they understand what they're asking for. So that, say, in the middle of the night when some junkie decides to break down Flush Flimball's door looking for that refreshing burst of flavor, that Mr. Flimball will not be able to call the local constabulary because the cops ain't coming, because they're not going to respond because he's not a taxpayer and not a citizen. The same for all of them. No more Citizens United. No more free speech rights for Koch Industries. God, I think we may be onto something here. What do you think? It's Friday on the front porch. By all means, let's talk about it. Because in essence, stomping one's feet and running out of good faith negotiations because one refuses to participate in the financial aspect of the maintenance of the Republic is nothing short of an abrogation of one's citizenship. What do you think? I mean, they're open. How American could they be? As Ed in the chat room says, the Republican fascists are doing their damned level best to keep the economic misery up in the hopes that they can dethrone Obushma come next year. What they're doing in any sane country would land them to prison for treason. They're arguing against their own citizenship. And I say we concede the argument to them. Enough already. It's not a discussion any longer worth having. Goodbye, and may history forget that you were our countrymen. Thank you, Samuel Adams, Brewer, Patriot. Who would want to call that their fellow citizen? Who would want to say, my fellow Americans, to a bunch of deadbeats? Because that's what we're talking about in the American rich. Deadbeats. If you're rich and you're American and you don't have a great big grin on your face taxed every tax day looking like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush, if you're not smiling ear to ear every time you write your check to the IRS and you're rich and you're American, there's something badly wrong. Because the rich in this country lap the cream from the top of the bucket, while the rest of us are left with the pathetic, thin, flavorless Blue John at the bottom. By the way, have you ever been to the chat room? It'd be a great time to pop in and just say hi. Good little group building up in there right now. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, chatroom/chatroom, easy and free. I think this topic deserves some consideration. Maybe it's time we figured out a way just to tell them thanks, no thanks. You don't. I mean, these are the. Look, give them what they want. They want to abrogate the 14th Amendment. By God, let's abrogate the 14th Amendment and let's make them the first exemplars thereof. Bye. Enjoy China or Guatemala or whoever the hell will have you. You bunch of predators, right? Yeah. So something to talk about perhaps as we go into the evening. But I did mention that one of my favorite actors has passed away, namely Peter Falk. My favorite role of his being Vince Ricardo, the madcap CIA agent in The In-Laws. And given the current economic climate, this particular clip that I'm about to run for you even has a sort of special relevance. Now, don't run away. It's a fairly lengthy clip, but it is well worth it. Because just as we started out discussing the Repiglicans who do not want to pay their way, and instead want to ride on your back and mine, who are willing to let the country default on its debt, regardless of the consequences, and there is a bit of an open discussion here as to what those consequences would be. This clip is relevant to that question. If for no other reason than it sort of goes in that direction, although it gets there by a different route. The Repiglicans have said that if it means them paying some reasonable amount of money in exchange for the privilege of American citizenship, then they're not willing to do it. Ultimately, what that means is that to the Republican Party, America is just not worth it. Never mind all that mourning in America, goblolly hoo-ha BS. Never mind those 1,000 points of light. Never mind that compassionate conservatism. What the Repiglicans are saying when they say that they are no longer willing to pay taxes is that America is simply not worth it. And they're not kidding. This isn't negotiating strategy. If they cannot have the America that they want exactly by God as they want it, then America is not worth it. And so I offer you, in memory of Gone but Not Forgotten, Peter Falk. This scene from 1978's The In-Laws. What's the setup? It takes place in a coffee shop, a diner in New York City, as madcap CIA agent Vince Ricardo explains to mild-mannered dentist Sheldon Kornpet exactly why it was that it was necessary to break into Mr. Ricardo's office. I hope you enjoy this as much as I do.
You feeling a little better? You were smart to order that split pea soup. That looks delicious. May I? It's very nice. It's a little greasy, but it's very nice. Crumble up some saltines into it, Shell. That will absorb the grease. Shell, when I speak, do you hear me? Do you understand the words?
Yeah.
Well, that's good. That's a relief. I was beginning to get worried. I thought maybe all this excitement had gotten to you.
Let me see if I got this straight. You work for the CIA.
That's right.
You've been with them how long? 20 years?
Since Eisenhower.
And you robbed the United States Mint for the CIA. Is that correct?
Completely.
Okay. Let me ask you a question. Since when is it the policy of the CIA to impress private citizens into their service without telling them what it's about? So that individuals of high standing in the community end up running down the streets with bullets flying past their heads.
That was a mistake.
Some mistake.
Thank God nobody was hurt.
How do you justify such behavior?
Shell, I didn't do it lightly. It was done in the name of something pretty important which you couldn't understand.
I couldn't understand.
No, it is too complicated.
I read the newspapers. I graduated second in my class. Don't underestimate the man in the street, buddy.
All right, you got a point. You're right. When you're right, you're right. Okay. Try and follow me, Shell. This whole thing has to do with a conspiracy that originated in Central America against the economy of the United States. We first got wind of it 9 months ago when they robbed the German mint. Well, actually, they robbed the English mint, then the German mint, and then the Swiss mint. And they never took any money.
Oh, who did this?
It's a Latin American syndicate.
Okay.
They only took the plates.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you have to understand is that we have information. The agency has...
The CIA.
Oh, goddamn right, buddy, the CIA. We know that these plates are going down to Central America. And these people intend to run over billions of dollars of this currency. They want to obliterate their debts.
What debts?
Well, all these countries, Shell, they all owe billions of dollars to the West. Right. And they can never pay it back.
Right.
They're too poor.
Right.
You know that. Their only hope is worldwide inflation. But it has to be a huge one. I mean, so big that paper money's not worth anything. You use it for wallpaper.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once they get these plates, the ones that I robbed yesterday,
which
is American dollars, now they're all set.
Set for what?
Well, what do you think's going to happen when they start running off this dough and suddenly there's trillions of extra dollars, francs, and marks floating around? You've got a collapse of confidence in the currency.
Right.
People are going to panic.
Yeah.
There's going to be gold riots, atonal music,
right.
Political chaos,
right.
Mass suicide, right?
Yeah.
It's Germany before Hitler.
Uh-huh.
You can see that.
Yeah.
Jesus. I don't know what people are going to do when a six-pack of Budweiser costs
$1,200. Oh, that'll be awful.
You think I'm bullshitting, don't you?
No, I don't.
Well, they thought I was bullshitting.
Who thought you were bullshitting?
The CIA. I told him. I said, fellas, the thing to do is to rob the U.S. Mint. Really rob it. Professionally. With real gangsters and real guns. Get the engraving. Go to Central America. Smoke out the action and nail those bastards. They thought it was too risky. Turned it down.
Wait a minute. The CIA turned this down? I thought you were doing it to them.
I am.
Well, then they're behind you.
No, this I did on my own.
You robbed the United States Mint on your own? The CIA thought it was too crazy?
Too risky. Yeah.
So you went ahead and robbed it on your own with gangsters. You committed a federal crime.
Of course. But the Treasury Department is on the case.
So what happens if you get caught?
We won't get caught. Not if
stop the week! If you get caught, is the agency going to come forward and say it's okay, he works for us?
No. I'm out in the cold on this one, Shell. If I get caught, they shred my records, they say they never heard of me, and it's 20 years in the slammer.
What about me? I was the one running through the streets with that goddamn thing. I was the one in the gutter.
And you were tremendous, Shell. The way you handled yourself, I can't tell you how impressed I was. No, I mean this. It's been something I've been wanting to say. You were sensational, Shell. And it's an act of friendship that I will remember for as long as I live. Which could be about an hour.
So what do I got, an hour and a half?
You have nothing to worry about. You're an innocent victim.
How so?
I know it, and the cab driver knows it. We both say it.
What happens to you?
Oh, I'll manage. Listen, I've been in tougher jams before. You know, back when Kennedy was president. You saw the picture in the office?
Yes, I did.
He was crazy about me.
I was very impressed.
Honey, do you have a check?
Listen, let me ask you about that picture. What did that inscription mean? At least we tried.
Bay of Pigs. That referred to the Bay of Pigs.
You were involved with the Bay of Pigs?
Involved? That was my idea. I'll get this, Joe.
The Bay of Pigs.
You win some, you lose some. Listen, you want to be home in about an hour?
Why?
I want to make sure we get that engraving out of your house.
What engraving?
Last night, I thoughtlessly left one in your basement.
An engraving from the bag?
In my haste.
In my basement?
Why are you getting so excited?
Why am I getting so excited? The central piece of evidence in the biggest federal crime since the atomic spy case is sitting in my basement. You want to know why I'm getting excited?
Go back to your lunches. Do I let them in your business?
I want that thing out of my house!
Shelly, I'm getting to that. Sit down. Finish it.
I don't want to sit down. I don't want my suit.
You hardly touched it.
Stop with the suit!
All right, relax. Now the thing. We'll call it the thing, okay, Shelly? But you know I mean the engraving. The thing will be out of your house in 2 hours. A man calling himself D. Tracy will come to your home wearing glasses. Give him the thing, okay?
Let me explain something to you. If that thing isn't out of my house in 2 hours, so help me God, Vince. So
I understand your feelings, believe me. But it's going to be gone by 5 o'clock, believe me. And years from now, we're going to look back on this whole thing sitting around a Christmas tree, and we're all going to have a big laugh. I got to run, Sheldon. Remember, D. Tracy, glasses.
Complete stranger, he sat down here next to me. Never saw him before in my life.
Remember, D. Tracy, galoshes. Genius. For those of you who have never seen the film, I will simply say that it may very well be the most perfectly crafted comedy of all time. Really, really. But they're really... I mean, the timing, you know, the little throwaways in there. And you were tremendous, Shell. David in Tennessee picked up on that one. God, that's beautiful, he says. The timing and the utter lack of acting. Lordy, that pair is good. And they were. Oh, my God. Anecdotally, I read somewhere once upon a time that Peter Falk had to be convinced that the film was funny. Because there's really, I mean, Vince Ricardo's character is the ultimate straight man. And it takes, dear God, it takes an actor of what? Name one. Of Gil Gudian, of Olivier stature. You know, and he's a little 5'6" guy with a squinty face because one eye was glass. When he was playing high school baseball and he was called out in sliding into third base, Peter Falk, he thought he was safe, and he popped out his glass eye and handed it to the umpire and said, "You'll be needing this." But you know, Barrymore's stature to carry off the straight lines in this film. I loved him as an actor. I grew up, you know, my father would not miss Columbo. And the first time we ever saw this, my father loved comedy. And sat there in his comfy chair in our little middle-class living room in our brick ranch style in northwest Alabama. And simply gave himself over to incurable hee-haws, guffaws, paroxysms of laughter. And it begins with the... So any of you who have not seen The In-Laws, treat yourself. Remember, I can't think of a better way to remember Peter Falk than this film. There are others that were more well-known, you know, him as the grandfather in The Princess Bride, Wings of Desire. News Ninja Susan wrote in to say that she loved him in Griffin and Phoenix. That one was a tearjerker. Oh, I hate that. That's, Why is the ringer back on? We'll have to solve that in some short order. But, you know, there's something very, very special in that little description of what a worldwide economic collapse would look like. Atonal music. I don't know what America's going to do when a six-pack of Budweiser costs $1,200. Well, that's what the Republicans want. It's 1978, and that's it. I don't know. Is this another film that somebody in the Republican National Committee watched and said, hey, what a great idea. Let's collapse the economy. We'll get rich. But it was the first thing I thought of when I saw the news of Mr. Falk's passing. We're going to have to deal with that. David in Tennessee noting timing. He says, and this is a deeper story that I hope David will someday tell. He says, as the son of a fine straight man, I worship the craft. The guy getting the laugh, he's found on every corner. The guy making the laugh possible, now him? First you got to find a guy that wants to be that guy, and then that guy has years of work ahead of him. What was it that Barry Moore said when the young reporter or whomever asked him how to play a death scene, and he responded, boy, dying is easy. Comedy is hard. And so, just as a matter of, on this Front Porch Friday, another lengthy scene from The In-Laws, but one that this could be radio drama. It doesn't require the visuals. A dinner scene. Dinner, because his son and Sheldon Kornpet's daughter are getting married. That's the whole setup to the film. And they're having dinner. It's the first time the in-laws are meeting each other. And, of course, I've already given it all away. You know that Vince Ricardo is a rogue CIA agent. And so he's got a cover. And like any good agent, he can lie with absolutely charming aplomb. These lines are again, gut-bustingly funny, and yet they are delivered as rock-solid and straight as though they were from Hamlet. Nancy Dussault, Alan Arkin, Peter Falk, 1978, The In-Laws, the dinner table scene.
Vince, how long did you actually live in Guatemala?
Oh, she was gone for ages.
I was in the jungle, the bush we called it, for approximately 9 months.
9 months? My God, that really must have been something.
Sheldon, it was unbelievable. I saw things. They have tsetse flies down there the size of eagles.
Really? In the evening, I would stand in front of my hut and watch in horror
as these giant flies would pick children off the ground and carry them away.
My God.
All the things he told us.
Oh, it was an incredible sight. Peasants screaming, chasing these flies down the road, waving brooms.
You can imagine the pathetic quality of this, waving these crudely fashioned brooms at these enormous flies as they carry their children off to almost certain death.
That is just the most horrible thing.
You sure these are flies you're talking about?
Flies? Natives had a name for them. Jose Grecos de Muertos.
Oh.
Flamenco dancers of death.
You took those slides and then they never came out, remember?
Well, that's a shame. I really would have liked to have seen those slides.
Yeah, I left them in a jacket that got modernized. I tell you, it broke my heart because those slides would have won me a Pulitzer Prize. The enormous flies flapping slowly away into the sunset. Small brown babies clutched in their beaks.
Wow.
Beaks. Flies with beaks.
Sight I'll never forget. I was stunned. Appalled.
What did you do?
What did I do?
As a consultant, what did you do about the flies?
Sadly, there's very little you can do because of the tremendous red tape in the bush.
There's red tape in the bush?
Enormous red tape, gentlemen. These flies, for example, they're protected against pilferage under the provisions of the Guacamole Act of 1917.
You know, I've been getting the National Geographic for years. I never ran into any...
Could I ask for one?
Yeah.
Oh, I'd like some, too, for the purposes of a toast.
Oh, a good idea.
I'm not the most eloquent guy in the world, but I would like to say that this has been a most lovely occasion.
And I couldn't agree more.
And on Sunday, there's going to be another occasion, even more lovely, more sacred. And all I really want to say is that I'm just honored and moved to be part of the Cornbeck family. And I hope we'll be together in the good times. To share them with joy. And if there are bad times, God forbid, we'll work that out too. But together.
Wow. Oh, that was really lovely, Mr. Gale.
Yeah, I feel the same way, Guy.
Oh.
I'd like to say that as difficult as it is for me to give my little girl away, I'm very happy that it's to someone as wonderful as Tommy. And my hope is that the Cornpets and Ricardos share many happy and peaceful occasions through many happy and peaceful years.
Oh, hear, hear.
Excuse me, where is the phone?
Phone?
There's one in the kitchen.
Where is the furthest one? I have to make a long-distance call, and sometimes with these overseas connections, I have to scream like a banshee.
Well, there's one in the basement, but it's a mess.
Oh, that's okay. Through there?
Oh, I'll show you.
Please, don't bother. I'll find him.
That and his mysterious phone calls. I just said Dad and his mysterious phone calls.
What the hell do you mean by that?
Nothing. Really? You're just always making these weird calls in back rooms and pay booths.
You little snot nose, those phone calls put you through college.
Then I'm sure Tommy didn't mean...
I worked myself up to a position where I can make these kind of top-level phone calls to top businessmen, and my own son derogates.
Dad, I wasn't derogating.
Well, maybe you weren't. I'm terribly sorry. Everybody's been a long day.
Oh, listen.
Through there?
Yeah, first door on the left. Pull the string to the light.
Thanks.
Comic genius. Peter Falk. Dead at 83. And fondly, fondly remembered. Three lines blinking, three lines open. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. Oh, and just one more thing.
Question the detectives. Question the detectives. Question the detectives. Watching the detectives. They're watching the detectives.
14 minutes before the hour, Elvis Costello watching the detectives. Yeah, it seemed like an appropriate bumper coming out. Now, you know, those scenes just have those little moments that he... And I understand Jim. Jim writing in says, I still prefer James Mason, George Sanders, and Sir Laurence Olivier as the greatest losses. Well, they didn't die today. Peter Falk did, and he deserves remembering. And, you know, comedy... Well, comedy is a tough craft. But that line from Jeff Greenfield's... review from 1973 of Columbo stays with me. The assurance that those who dwell in marble and satin, those whose clothes, food, and cars and mates are the very best, do not deserve it. The whole quote from Jeff Greenfield, this is perhaps the most thoroughgoing satisfaction Columbo offers us. The assurance that those who dwell in marble and satin, those whose clothes, food, cars, and mates are the very best, do not deserve it. Pick one. Pick one. Does Rush Limbaugh deserve $50 million a year? Does Glenn Beck, who makes his fortune calling other people Nazis, does he deserve the tens of millions that he possesses? The Koch brothers, what have they ever done to deserve what they have? But then again, I guess you can turn the whole thing on a dime and call up that great line from Clint Eastwood's The Unforgiven. Deserving's got nothing to do with it. There are some desserts, but this is not the kind of society, and I'm not the kind of person who advocates the passing out of the just ones. That's too easy. Let them make their own mistakes. Let them argue for their own demise, because that's what they're doing. The Republicans, these self-centered, greedy, sociopathic freaks, especially the ones at the top of the food chain, Newt Gingrich. They are arguing against their own citizenship, and I would submit that we would be wise to heed them and let them have their way. No more taxes for you, but no more American citizenship either. Why not, huh? So, enough shilly-shallying. It is, in fact, Friday on the front porch, and let's go straightways to the phone. Hey, welcome to the program.
Geez, I get to lead off tonight?
Yeah, absolutely.
This is Pat.
Hey, Pat, how are you?
I'm pretty good. I don't know. I'm still 2 weeks behind, even though you've been away for so long.
Well, between that and the Prism series coming up, I'm sure you'll be completely caught up by the time we get to mid-July.
Yeah, I was thinking that the other quote that I can think of about desserts and deserves is I think it was Shakespeare. I'm not positive, but if we all got what we deserved, who among us would escape a beating?
There's that, and what was it that Twain said? If heaven was granted on merit instead of grace, our dogs would enter and we would stay out.
Yep, absolutely. Oh. This is so sad. Peter Falk died. I didn't even know until I turned on the show to make sure you were actually on.
That came in probably about 3:30 this afternoon, and I just went, oh damn.
Yeah.
And bless his heart, I guess it was a tough ending because there was a line in the obit saying that he had suffered from Alzheimer's for several years.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I read today in the Guardian was that Glenn Campbell. Is suffering from Alzheimer's.
Yeah, he's planned, I guess, his final tour, and
yeah,
you know, there is some, and it is not a comforting thing, and it is in fact a terrifying thing. there are those of us listening now who will at some point be told, hey, you've got it. And yeah. What do you do then? What do you... I can't even begin to... Oh, Jesus.
You go someplace and die quickly, right? That's
what well, in the Republican plan, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, Bob. So, let me get my standard horn pitch out of the way first. I haven't been able to give for a few months, and I knew because this month is going to be a tough one, especially for you, that I put aside some of my cigar money, and I sent it last week. I don't know if you got it or not. I think you did.
Yes.
And
thank you.
Oh, it's no problem. You know, I like I said, it's been tough. You know, wouldn't think that with the you know supposed money I'm making that it would be so tough, but it.
No, you got little kids. There's no such thing as plenty when you got little kids.
It's true, especially when they just went through a pair of sneakers that we bought in April. Can't wear.
Well, yeah, and for those who don't recall, you are raising little twin boys. How old are they now?
They're six. They'll be seven in September. They just finished their first year of kindergarten, and they're down the Cape with their mom. Visiting grandma and grandpa.
Yeah, so everything you buy twice.
Yeah.
That's two pairs of shoes, that's two pairs of jeans, that's two, you know, oh, God. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I'm still working, you know, I know that they've gone out of style in most of the world, but when I got to meet Albert last week in Wisconsin, I reminded him that we are still working on an old-fashioned arranged marriage because... he's got a lovely, he and his lovely wife have an absolutely adorable pair of 7-year-old twin girls. So this is just, you know, like I said, I think this is just, well, it's kismet.
Yeah, absolutely. So Albert's doing well?
Seems to be. What a delightful afternoon we spent.
Well, I hope you told him we miss his voice, because I certainly did.
Well, you haven't caught up with the podcasts. We heard from Albert two nights ago, so I think you'll enjoy it when you get there.
Great. I'm looking forward to it. So, yeah, like I said, I'm 2 weeks behind. I don't know. I'm also kind of pretty well removed from Facebook, and I left my profile up, but I'm not visiting it, and I post to Twitter, but I don't spend all day with it on and looking at it, you know, like I used to.
Right, because, I certainly won't criticize, and in fact, I may very well praise you for that, because that stuff can, it begins to, how best to say this, Patrick, it begins to mimic reality, when reality is the last thing in the world it is. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And I thought I was going to gain a lot of time. I didn't gain a lot of time. I gained a little bit of time. Like, instead of getting to bed between, you know, 12:30 and 1:30, I get to bed between, you know, 11:30 and 12:30 now. But you know, so I'm catching up on my sleep a bit. Enough about me. have y'all been talking about what's happening in Nebraska? Because I don't understand what's going on. I don't know if anything is actually happening or if there's been an actual meltdown and nobody's talking about it. I got an email from one of the people that I was friends with on Facebook, talking about how the Obama administration has placed a media blackout on coverage of it, and I don't know what's going on.
I don't know if it is an overt media blackout, but reliable information is hard to come by. I ran across something earlier today. I got it from our friend Corey, who sends out stuff on Facebook, and it was just the darndest thing. It's from a website called Forbidden Knowledge TV, daily videos from the edges of science, and it's weird because you know, there is so little information coming out, except there was that news story in CNN yesterday, and Sandra and I discussed it last night on the program, to the effect that Fort Calhoun, the entirety of Fort Calhoun is under 2 feet of water.
Wow.
And there are these water-filled berms that are 8 feet tall and 16 feet thick at the base, and that's all that's standing between the reactor and the moving, rising waters of the Mississippi, of the Missouri River.
Wow.
So I get this thing, and it's really not it's not conducive to radio, but I get this thing from Forbidden Knowledge TV, and I know nothing about them. So it, you know, for all I know, it's it may be an Alex Jones enterprise. It, you know, you
right.
just
well,
don't know.
That was what I was a little nervous about when I got the email. It might have been from Corey that maybe you.
But this thing has to do with. Well, let me see if I can make some sense of it. It's an Egyptian website that someone found, and it comes from a company that I guess does modeling for
yep.
what happens with radiation. The name of the company is, let's see, Universal Educational Systems. And it's computer modeling for nuclear disasters, and this is a picture of what can be expected of a nuclear plume coming off of Fort Calhoun. You know, no, I'm as unnerved as you or anyone else may be by this, Patrick, because I have dear friends of long standing who live in Omaha. And as I said in today's show post, one of the reasons that I'm staying out of the tequila bottle lately is that I'm resisting the urge to just pick up the phone and call him and go, get out, get out, get out, get out!
Right.
Because if you wait, you know what the official designation of what's going on at Fort Calhoun is, right?
No.
The NRC has designated it a very unusual event.
Oh, Jesus.
You know, that's what happens when a two-headed goat is born, not when there's lapping waters of the Missouri River ready to inundate a freaking nuclear reactor.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to sow fear or elevate panic or anything like that, but you know the best way to keep down panic and fear, it was one of those precious little moments when I was hanging out with Albert when he looked down at his one of his little daughters and said, "Honey, what is fear?" And she said, "Fear is the mind killer, Daddy." you know that comes from Dune, of course, but it's true. Fear, you know, fear is the paralyzing thing. Fear, the unknown is what will get you. You know, what you know you can deal with. And yet you have to wonder if something goes, and it's the same with any nuclear reactor, if something goes horribly sideways, is there really any realistic hope of getting people out of harm's way? With a nuclear reactor, I don't think so.
Right.
And, you know, that's the dirty little secret that they have resisted telling us for lo these many years.
Well, and that's why we have to, you know, subsidize the insuring of every nuclear reactor in the country. You know, we have to underwrite it. Because you know, no company would do it. Because, you know, even as slim a chance as there would be for a meltdown or something.
So I guess the next question is if something horrible does happen, is Eric Leave Britney Alone Cantor ready to run out and say, "We don't have the money to clean up the nuclear mess in Nebraska. They just going to have to glow in the dark and get them some cancer and die." Because that's what we're dealing with on the other side. They're freaking thugs.
Yeah, they are. They are. They're trying to destroy us. They have a death wish.
Yeah, but it's not, you know, most people who have a death wish want, you know, it's like somebody who goes and commits suicide by cop. They have a death wish, but it's our death they're wishing for.
Yeah, well, it's because they think that they can, you know, escape it, and, you know, everyone else will, you know, drop dead or whatever.
Right, because I guess they're special and God likes them better? I don't know, Pat, what? It makes me crazy.
Power, yeah. So, yeah, the other thing, the show I listened to last night was Reverbo was talking about the guy heard interviewed on NPR about conspiracy theories and the world as it is. And it made me want to pull my hair out.
But see, you're not alone in that feeling, Pat. This is, you know, that pull our hair out feeling is something that we all feel, and this is, you know, this little program for all of, what does it cost, less than 5 cents an hour or something like that? This little program is how we keep, this is how we keep the hair in the follicles.
Absolutely. I know that's how I keep mine.
Oh, and you mentioned, by the way, totally separate subject, but you mentioned not being around Twitter. I was watching my feed last night after the program, right before the Appalachian Power was no longer able to keep the power on here. You know, it thunders and we lose electricity.
Yeah.
One of the guys I follow, a really good tweeter by the name of Ray Beckerman, had tweeted a link from the Drive-By Truckers. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but they played Letterman Tuesday night.
Yeah, I saw that. I got an email because I'm on their email list, and so I got an email from them saying they were doing that, and then they played some Brooklyn Bowl or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I was aware of it. I didn't catch it, but
I watched it. It's a clip well worth watching because what happens is after the show, after they played their song, and Letterman comes out and sort of does some banter with the band and says, well, take us on out with it, and actually ask them to encore the song some more, which was really, really cool, because he doesn't do that just a whole lot.
Right, right. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, well, they were playing Everybody Needs Love.
Yeah, well, I saw that. That's what, one of the things they said in their email. That's what they were going to be playing. The other, I'm going to think, right before Mother's Day, I think Jason came through Boston, and he was playing with Hayes Carroll, and I guess they're doing a co-headlining tour, so they alternate nights where some headlines and Hayes headlines. And I wasn't able to go because I found out too late, but I thought that was pretty.
Yeah, well, I didn't know they played in tandem with Hayes. That's really, really cool.
Yeah. And what else? I'm going for my birthday. Annie got me some tickets to this. It's called the Green River Festival. I don't know if any other New Englanders out there are planning on going, or any horn listeners. But the Green River Festival, July 16th, 17th, or 17th, 18th, whatever, the Saturday, Sunday. It's a America Roots music kind of festival, and they got some really good bands. We're going on Saturday, and I'm gonna see Toots and the Maytals for the first time, and Black Joe Lewis and the Honey Bears, and the Old 97s. And
oh, that'll be a high time.
Oh yeah, no, I'm so excited, and I was so happy that she got me. I only hinted about 100 times at this.
Throwing them around like tinsel at the Christmas tree. Now, honey! Well, Pat, I'm glad you're going to get to go, brother. It's awfully good to hear from you, and we don't hear from you enough. Check in once in a while and just let us make sure everything's okay.
I will. And everybody, dig in deep and send some cash because we need it. It's a nickel an hour, like Bob said. And we all know that nickel goes an awful long ways.
The old Pepsi jingle from back in the Depression was nickel, 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 that's a lot. I think we're one of the few people that can still say that. Thank you, Patrick. You take care and give our love to the family.
I will.
Bye now.
Bye, Bob.
Patrick calling from Massachusetts. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Chris from the Nijmegen.
Well, hey, Chris, let's pick up where we left off. How fortuitous.
Well, how about things we want to think about now? Moving on to that, you were talking about do people deserve to make so-and-so amount of money every year, and I've been talking with this a lot of people in my cabs, and I haven't found a single person who disagrees. Even the right-wingers agree which is just terrifying when everybody's agreeing with you. We apply an insanity test to capitalism on the low end. You know, you're naked. Here, have some money. Please put some clothes on. You know, generally living in a society where we don't like naked people. We apply it to the low end where starvation is concerned. Oh, you're starving. Here, have some money. Go eat something. Mars bar, doesn't matter. Eat something. We apply it to the low end. Oh, you're standing out in the rain and birds are perching on you. That's kind of disgusting. Here, you have some money. Go get a room somewhere. We apply it to the low end. Everybody agrees. We should apply it to the low end because we don't want, you know, people sitting out on the street starving to death naked and such. You know,
yeah, because, you know, there's this sort of interface with, what was it, Maslow's hierarchy of need?
Exactly. I mean, you don't even have to get into the moral aspect of it, though, because, you know, we're talking about a very large, vast quantity of the human experience where we're dealing with sociopaths in that subset. So, you know, don't even go to the moral thing, because, you know, we're not actually dealing with the whole of humanity. Just go with the whole property values thing. You know, you don't want starving people on your front lawn. It just makes things look bad, right? So go with the aesthetics, go with the property values, go with all the mercenary capitalist crap. By their own definition, there should be an insanity test at the low end. But what about the upper end? I mean, there is some point where you're earning so much money that even though I can't articulate where you're stealing it from or from whom, I know you're stealing it from someone. Now, it might be, say, you're owning a company, you're stealing it from your investors, you're stealing it from your employees, you're stealing it from your company's ability to expand, you're stealing it from your customers. Like, you could just drop the price of everything that you're selling and sell a lot more of them so more people could enjoy the wonderful widget that you produce. You may not be able to articulate, like in the place of, hedge funds and such, who they're actually stealing it off of. But you know what? When you're making more than, now here's the part where we get to argue, whatever that value is, say, $1 billion. You know, you make more than $1 billion, you're definitely not doing anything in your life that deserves that kind of compensation. You're not curing cancer. You're not making everybody have, I don't know, simultaneous orgasms across the planet and thus happy. There's no possible thing you could do to make everybody think and agree, yes, you earned that $1 billion. So we have an insanity test, a 100% tax on all earnings, doesn't matter what type, the capital gains, earning by the sweat of your brow, if you will. But that insanity test should be applied to the top. Now, you might argue on what level. Okay, at some point, you're earning so much that people want to kidnap you or your children. We're going to have to invest in police to keep you relatively safe. That's one level. It might be lower, it might be higher, but these are all multiple insanity tests to apply to the top end. You might say that, oh, you have so much money that politicians will inherently corrupt themselves to curry favor with you. You may not want them to be corrupt. You may beg them, please, don't be corrupt. I'll give you my money. Just don't go looking for it. Don't do favors for me. I'm a bad person, what have you. They will be corrupt inherently because you're rich. Because you exist, you corrupt the entire society you're a part of. At some level.
That's something we could probably spend an hour on, Chris. You know, the idea that it is inherently corrupting.
Well, you know, then there's the Bill Gates. At some point, you have so much money, and this is just earnings. This is not, I'm thrifty, I saved up a whole nest egg, I get to do with it as I will. I would never argue that if you're thrifty and you save a bunch of money or get together with a bunch of other people and contribute to a common pool to do some great noble purpose or even a horrible, craven, evil purpose, that you have the legitimate right in capitalism to do this. This is all that capitalist argument. What I'm saying is the earning potential is there that, you know, an insanity test should be applied. And one last one is that if you have to live in a community where people save up to retire, that this is the nest egg they're going to save up so that they will have enough money to last them through the rest of their life and have an enjoyable life, and that this is sort of a quantifiable thing. If you earn more a year than that nest egg, you are going to so embitter at least one person in that community that you're generally going to be considered a real bastard person. And that maybe that should be another insanity test. Now, again, we may argue what that level might be. What is an appropriate nest egg? And should you be allowed to earn 25% over it or lower? But it should be in there somewhere. You know, just something to chew on. But I haven't got anybody who disagrees with me on that. Now, we might disagree on what the number is. That's like I'd say, I'm getting down to the point where, you know what, What's the, do it in terms of multiples of the poverty, you know, issue wages in terms
multiples of the poverty index.
Yeah, it's like I'm five times more than the poverty index, and that's really lovely. That's a nice middle class wage. Oh, it's okay. I'll get you a sucky. It's okay. There you go.
I love it. I love it. I love it when we hear the next generation in the background.
Yeah, she's a fairly good contributor herself. And, I lost all thought there. I'll pass it on to the next caller. Tag, you're it.
Oh, no worries, Chris. No worries, Chris. No worries. I think, go ahead. Don't give up on this. Apply your considerable, intellectual skills to the idea of the insanity index. Let's see what one looks like.
Oh, yeah, again, it's that whole, spite. I've gotten to the point where I'm so filled with spite, so cravenly hateful of those with more wealth than I am, at least from outward appearances. I think it's, I've got there by intellect, not by emotion, but, you know, that's up for debate, too. So I'm more leaning towards the whole communist thing. Let's say $50,000. That's it. If nobody's allowed to earn more than $50,000. Pretty low number, but you know what? I'm willing to do it to deny the banksters and everybody else who's a bastard person the ability to manipulate me with not much trouble at all. Give them some trouble. Make them save up a couple years so that they can afford a politician. I'm going to save up, and in a couple years, I'm going to have enough money to get a single bylaw passed at a municipal council. Make them work for it, you know? I mean, they may be able to...
Because they're not working for it now. What I find interesting out of what you've described, Chris, though, is that you say, you know, uniformly, everybody you talk to is at a point where it's just too much. And yet...
Everybody's seeing it, you know?
And yet, ask a teabagger. You know, ask a libertarian. One of those Republicans one of those peeved Republicans who wants to keep smoking dope. That's what a libertarian is. Ask them, well, no, the American dream is to get as rich as you can possibly get. And God, no, it isn't. You know, and yet, I guess one of the things that frustrates me, and maybe I'm part of the problem too, is that there is no forum in this country where we can have that discussion without it being preyed upon by the for-profit media so that it has to be a screaming fest. We can't have a and maybe that's just evidence that this country is too far gone.
I think it's too far big. You're such a wonderfully wealthy nation that every crook, every thief, every lazy bastard on the planet can't help but look at you with avarice in their eyes. And then you got this wonderful military where you get to take stuff away from other people too. How could they not want to swarm over you like maggots on a corpse? I mean, if you were a smaller country, you know, say the size of Germany or something like that. Germany, yeah, pretty big, you know, incredible economy, doing wonderful things, high technology. Japan, incredibly big, high technology, doing wonderful things, but they're not the U.S. Nobody's the U.S. The U.S. is the ultimate touchstone on, I have money, I want to control people.
And what you said about people around the world, bastards, looking to us, I saw a statistic today that just made the little hairs on the back of my neck stand up, Chris. And it was this. Half of the refugees in the world, half of the people who have had to put their lives in knapsacks and get moving, half of them are running from wars that we started. The United States started. How does a nation that dares call itself a Christian nation square that up, Chris?
Well, hell with the Christian nation thing. Actually, this guy called Qualia Soup just did an incredible dissertation on YouTube, of all things, with PowerPoint-level graphics on morality and ethics and how that exists in a human universe. It's fascinating. Some of the best stuff I've seen.
Oh, heavenly days! If you got a minute, you gotta shoot me that link, please. I gotta see that.
I will send it to you. There's a whole bevy of about four or five guys that talk about atheist issues on YouTube, and they're profoundly articulate. I mean, I've never seen anything this well done and documented and coherent and logical. It's like I wish I had their education. Fantastic. And it's like, what the hell have I been doing? I've been learning engineering, I've been learning physics, I've been learning computers. and then I can't state an argument as clearly as this guy over here, and it just fills me up.
But don't get too down on yourself, because this is not a generalist society, a generalist culture anymore. We've got to have people who know what you do, who know what you know, just as well as we've got to have people who can articulate that ethicist's argument.
Well,
and by the way, just to add to that refugee comment for a second, Chris, Texas Betsy, our blogger, just noted, she said, and the school district has decided that none of those refugees can be educated in my classroom because there's no money and they don't matter enough.
Having a bunch of gullible, economically disadvantaged people in your community means they're at the prey for every predator that comes around. And if they're at the prey of those predators, what if that predator decides, I want to kill all the white people in my area? I've got this wonderful group of people they've primed for me. I'm going to go in there with my force of personality and about 15 cents and going to have a set a mob of illegal immigrants. And I'm going to wipe out a neighborhood. This is not a long-term survival thing. This is going
on. I heard Malloy go on at some length, as only he can do last night, about those dumb cracker bastards in Georgia that now find themselves in a predicament of not being able to pick their own goddamn peanuts and blueberries.
I'm filled with sorrow for them. I'll light a candle.
Yeah, my heart is bleeding peanut butter for them. They wanted it. They wanted it. The Republicans are always good for a little lesson in the law of unintended consequences.
I just wish you weren't living down there in the buckle of a Bible belt or whatever they call it nowadays, and thus subject to the karma that's coming their way. I mean, the toxic environment notwithstanding, I really don't mean to belittle the West Virginia, we are a toxic waste dump for the world thing. I just have no idea how to handle it. So I skip over it, trippingly, with an island.
Well, that's okay, because in many instances we don't either. But that's the problem. We've got to stop making it a toxic waste dump before we can start curing the toxic waste dump. I mean, there are things that we need just mad scientists working on. Like, what do you know? Let's say we stop mountaintop removal tomorrow, Chris. What do we do with 100 billion gallons of toxic waste tucked in behind dirt dams? How do we make that go away?
By making a lot of money off of it, because it's got trace elements in it that could make you a goddamn fortune if retards didn't own it and say, basically pull the dog in the manger, love that term, dog in the manger on it. I can't eat the hay, but I'll damn well keep the cow away from it. Spiteful anti-capitalists, even though they pretend to be capitalists, I could make a bloody fortune off that stuff. Do you have any idea how much iridium is going for right now? Process a ton of that stuff, you get about an ounce that pays for the processing of the ton. You process it again for, anything else, and it will pay for the ton again. There are at least 8 things in mine tailings, from nickel smelters to steelworks to, even coal fly ash. It's stupidly worthwhile to do it. The only thing I can't figure out what to do, and I'm sure it's just a matter of looking it up on Google, is what the hell do you do with the arsenic? But I'm sure there's some massive market out there that'll make use of
mercury, arsenic, cadmium, barium. I mean, there is a use for barium, right?
All of those.
Selenium.
It's actually got a good market, which is just perverse. But you can sell mercury on the market quite handily.
And then ultimately, how do you fix the water table?
Well, once it's all gone, it's pretty easy to fix. Plus, there's the whole, I don't know if you've read up on this, but the best natural way of maintaining a water table in purity is to put an oyster bed above it. And then when the oysters die, you put their you crack their shells up in a simple ball mill, and you put those as a aggregate filter before everything else in your filtration system, and that absorbs a lot of the heavy metals. And then when they're, I guess you could call it decalcified, or they're worn out, just like a carbon filter eventually needs to be replaced, you bury it very, very, very deep, and eventually it turns into concrete if you bury it deep enough. Or you can actually put it in as aggregate into concrete and thus completely fixate it. So you've fixated all these horrible toxic things that you don't know about or can't make profit off of, and you've cleaned your water, and it's cleaned out all the heavy metals or radioactive isotopes, because most radioactive isotopes tend to be heavy metals. All things are good. But
Wow.
Again, you know, it's not complicated. It's an oyster bed. You run over a small swamp of oysters. You take the oysters out every once in a while. You don't eat them.
No, those would not be the yummy coquinis or blue points that I'm so fond of.
Export them to Republican districts.
Chris, thank you very much, brother. Have a wonderful weekend.
You're welcome. Have a nice day.
Bye now. That's Chris, otherwise known to you who visit the chat room as Psychoticus Rex. What a mind. What a mind. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
I do love Chris's sense of humor.
Special, isn't it? What's up, Susan?
Okay. First of all, Griffin in Phoenix is not just a tearjerker. You find yourself alternating between laughing hysterically and bawling your head off, because the movie starts out with the stars, Jill Klaber and Peter Falk. They both receive a terminal diagnosis of cancer. They're going to die. And then the fun starts. And trust me.
You know, I'm trying to.
I know.
I'm trying. I should have seen. I swear, but I can't remember it.
Well, it got very little play. In fact, you can't even get it on DVD. It's never been transferred over to DVD. They made a remake of it recently, and that's on DVD, and it's horrible. But it doesn't have the charm of the Peter Falk version, because Peter Falk made that movie.
Well, he made everything he was in.
Because of the wry humor he was able. You know, this man is dying. And the graveyard humor he's able to toss in periodically just saved the whole movie. Instead of being this depressing tearjerker, you're on the edge of your seat wondering what these two actors are going to come up with next.
Well, now you've... Somebody will send me a link to be able to see it somehow or another.
Well, let me put it this way. There's one scene towards the end with him and a crowbar that is just has got to be seen to be believed. I won't say any more than that, but it's a classic. As far as, you know, as far as meeting, if I can shift the subject a little bit to one of the previous callers about maybe meeting communism, there's a problem with that.
To it?
Won't work. Won't work.
Well, it's never really been tried. I mean, let's remember that about communism. Communism has never actually been tried.
Well, okay. The only version that I know of didn't work. You know what a DACA is, don't you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Adasha?
Yeah. The communist bosses were basically, we would end up having Wall Street be our communist bosses. Whoop-de-doo. Changing one set of masters and giving it, you know, the same set of masters, different title, with absolute authority. What changed?
Well, and I mean, you know, there's the warning that comes via Orwell's Animal Farm, of course.
Yeah, some animals are more special than others. It's just, scum floats to the top, let's face it. Something like slime mold.
Indeed.
And the only thing you can do is make with the, wield the chlorine bleach with a free hand. That's a metaphor, Agent Fred.
Yeah, those reminders do kind of have to go out.
And, yeah, it's just, that's the way it is. if you try something like that, historically, I realize it was not pure communism. I don't think the human race is set up to be able to stand pure communism. We'll subvert it.
Well, and that's the thing that, that many have argued, is that it is incompatible with basic human nature.
Yeah. Somebody is always going to be around to game the system, and we have some of the best system gamers in the world. They're sitting in Wall Street and on the boards of the transnationals. They ain't going to give up their goodies.
Well, it's all predicated on it being a global movement, and at least until we get to Star Trek technology, global movements aren't really that feasible.
Yeah.
I mean, here and there you'll see some, but most change has come at local levels, or at least regional, sometimes national levels, and has been largely ad hoc and piecemeal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, did you hear of the wanker's little problem?
Which one and what?
He had his budget bill that he finally managed to be able to sign. He had to cancel the
signing. Oh, yeah, because he was about to sign it in front of a tax felon.
Yeah.
Yeah, Scott Wanker, or Walker. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I was just...
And by the way, I got sent a link earlier today by Patty Cowgirl of a post by Blue Gal over at Crooks and Liars. Apparently that bumper sticker that we saw while traveling through Wisconsin with the picture of Scott Walker that said, does this ass make my car look fat?
Yeah.
Somebody has it across the entire back of their truck in huge form. Does this ass make my truck look big?
Can I get a picture? I'll post it.
Well, it's right. Yeah, just go thumbing down through Crooks and Liars. It was there earlier today.
Oh, goody, goody, goody. That deserves to be spread all over the place.
Right, and the nice thing is, like I said, it has a magnificent... I wish we were still running a horn store, because we could make a series of these. As I think Sandra mentioned, Daryl Issa in California, or how about Nathan Deal in Georgia, or Chris Christie, or LePage in Maine.
Yeah.
It's transferable. Does this ass make my car look big?
Yeah. I wonder if Cafe Press might be willing to pick it up.
Well, we could probably design one there, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I have a observation.
Yes.
For the nice people in Georgia,
mm-hmm.
who have apparently cut off their nose to spite their face. Now, Georgia is famous for something besides peaches. They're famous for onions.
Vidalias.
Yes. I have come from the area, you know, Pacific Northwest, which is also
Walla Walla Sweets. Yes, we've had that discussion.
Right. Do you know there is nothing that smells worse than a field of rotting onions?
I will happily take your word for that, without any desire to ever discover that empirically for myself.
They're going to remember this in their nightmares for years to come, because the smells stay in your memory forever. And it just cracks me up. You did it to yourselves, people. Sit on it. If you'd have been willing to treat these people decently, they wouldn't have left. And Arizona, you're next. They're leaving en masse. What I'm waiting to see is for the economy in Georgia to crash, because all those workers, they rented apartments, they bought at grocery stores, da 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 da, and all of those businesses were generally owned by white people.
Well, you know, you put my show posts up every day, so you see it before anybody else. One of the things that I alluded to in today's show post, Susan, is a story coming out of Arizona. And I suggested in the show post that it might cause people to think twice before they pick up that apple or that celery or that green bell pepper at Wally World. Victoria Law at Truthout has a piece today. Headline, Martori Farms, Abusive Conditions at a Key Walmart Supplier. And it it has to do it has to do with prison labor at Perryville, I believe, Perryville, Arizona.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Abuses at Perryville, Victoria Law writes, have continued. The ADC has sent its, that's Arizona Department of Corrections, has sent its prisoners to work for private agricultural businesses for almost 20 years. The farm pays its imprisoned laborers $2 an hour, not including the travel time to and from the farm. Women on the Perryville unit are assigned to Martori Farms, an Arizona farm corporation that supplies fresh fruits and vegetables to vendors across the United States. Martori is the exclusive supplier to Walmart's 2,470 Supercenter and neighborhood market stores. Here's the testimony of one woman who worked on the farm crews. This is a quote, Susan, okay? They wake us up between 2:30 and 3 a.m. and kick us out of our housing unit by 3:30 a.m. We get fed at 4 a.m. Our work supervisors show up between 5 a.m. and 8 a.m. Then it's an hour to a 1.5 hour drive to the job site. Then we work 8 hours regardless of conditions. We work in the fields hoeing weeds and thinning plants. Currently, we are forced to work in the blazing sun for 8 hours. We run out of water several times a day. We ran out of sunscreen several times a week. They don't check medical backgrounds or ages before they pull women for these jobs. Most of us cannot do it. If we stop working and sit on the bus or even just take an unauthorized break, we get a major ticket which takes away our good time. We are told we get two, count them, two, Susan, 15-minute breaks and a half-hour lunch like a normal job, but it's more like 10 minutes than 20 minutes. They constantly yell at us we're too slow and to speed up because we're costing $150 an acre in labor, and that is not acceptable. The place is infested with spiders of all types, scorpions, snakes, and bloodsuckers, and bees because they harvest them. On my crew alone, there are 4 women with bee allergies, but they don't care. There are no epinephrine pens on site to save them from dying if they're stung. There's no antivenin available for snake bites, and they want us to use Windex, yes, glass cleaner, for scorpion stings. This is insanity. They are denying us medical care here. And Victoria Law continues and writes, although Martori Farms contracts with the local fire departments to provide medical attention for injuries on the farm, farm supervisors do not always allow women to stop work when they need medical care. When one woman complained of chest pains, the farm representative refused to allow her to stop working. The next day, an hour after returning to work, she began experiencing chest pains. The farm representative told her, come on, the big bosses are here. You'll be in trouble if you stop. It's not break time. Work, work, work. She complied, working in pain until the break. She resumed working for another half hour before she experienced even more severe pains. I have a steady, deep, dull pain with sharp, stabbing pains periodically. Then all of a sudden I can't even lift the hoe in the air. My arms are no longer strong enough. By now the chest pains are so bad it's knocking the wind out of me. I'm straight seeing stars. I tell our substitute boss officer Sanders I can't do it no more. I'm having really bad chest pains. I can't even lift the hoe anymore. And the man accused her of being a malingerer, faking it all.
When did she die of the heart attack?
There's no follow-up. But the one supervisor did say, oh, so now they're going to start faking fucking heart attacks to not work. Great. That's a quote. Sorry about the F word, everybody.
I could say something rude, crude, and unladylike.
Yeah. But, I mean, and this story at Truthout, on Wednesday I go to work. It's the second day in a row we're doing weeds. I'm up to my chest trying to weed to save a minimal amount of watermelon plants. Needless to say, the work was excessively hard, to put it mildly, so I must confess the day before I was on one, so to speak. My haunted mind was lost in the past, and so I was just trucking through the weeds, plowing them down, not even connecting with my physical exertion and pain. I was in so much pain because the day before I did, like, double the work everyone else did. So anyways, the M Farm representative, Martori, was pushing me so hard trying to get me to produce the same results as the day before. He has everyone at minimum teamed up helping each other plow through these weeds. Everyone but me, that is. I repeatedly asked him to give me a partner. I kept telling him I was in pain. I also went so far as to... But, you know, welcome to America, Susan, you know? I mean, this is a... So, you know, as we've said on the program in the past, consumer choices are actually moral choices. They don't... Remember, Bentonville, Arkansas hates unions. So God forbid somebody should be paid a living wage, as Betsy wondered about in a blog post over at the Horn today. You know, these guys who are complaining of their crops rotting in their fields in Georgia? Well, what would happen if they offered $35 an hour and a health plan?
Hell, I'd go out and dig.
Right. And the thing is, the statistics are out there.
An hour, you better believe it.
Farm workers in Florida have militated for tiny increases in their pay. And I remember a few years ago when it had to do with the tomatoes that went to Taco Hell.
Yeah.
A subsidiary of Yum Brands, by the way. And it turned out it wouldn't have even meant a penny's difference on the price of a taco.
Yeah. I haven't walked into a Walmart in close to 20 years. For specifically this reason. This and other reasons. If you are still shopping Walmart, why? Okay, in some cases, I understand, because they're the only game in town. If you have any kind of choice, why are you still shopping there? I could save myself by going to Walmart. Won't do it.
Because your soul can't stand it? Your soul can't stand it.
I will not subsidize slave labor, and that's what it's slave labor.
Indeed. Susan, we got them all stacked up, so I'm going to run on. But good to hear from you this evening, and I hope you have a good weekend.
You too. Give my thanks.
All right, sure will. Bye now. News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Welcome back, Mr. Cade.
Well, thank you, David.
Yes, it's good to hear some content. Well, actually, I did have new content last week, but it's good to hear your voice.
Well, thank you very kindly. You have no idea how nice it is to be back.
Well, I'm sure this Prism history. Series is going to be.
It is going to be amazing. I've got the whole bound agenda here, and I've been reading it, and it's just blowing my mind.
Now, one thing I'm interested in was about the funding situation. Is there a way that you can put recorded messages before you begin and after you leave, so people listening who just wander in, kind of like what
I don't know. I can't do it with Ustream. I know that.
Mm.
Because it costs $100 a month to buy your way out of the commercials on Ustream.
Mm.
If you, and frankly, given the bills that we have, I mean, I would love to do that. But given the bills that we have, there's no way there's $100 laying around just to give to Ustream so that I can put a message in front of and at the end of every session.
Right. Well, hopefully, people will when they listen, they'll understand the need to support the Horn even further. I believe they will, and I do think that the bumper sticker idea is a good one, and maybe we can pull some resources together.
Well, Sandra just sent me an email, David, and I guess at Zazzle.com.
Yeah, I was about to mention Zazzle. Good one, Sandra.
She says you can customize because there it is. Newt Gingrich, big picture of Newt Gingrich. Does this ass make my car look big?
Right.
So I don't know. Maybe somebody's already onto it.
It's unisex, too, for Michelle Bachman and everyone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's...
It's endless.
It may be the perfect assault on the right wing.
Well, I'll tell you what, we definitely need that, and
I need one here with Joe Manchin's face on it. Or maybe Joe Manchin and Jay Rockefeller in the form of a pair of cheeks.
Yeah, that would be good. I mean, you can there's a ton of things you could do. That's definitely something that the message needs to go out. You were talking about one thing I wanted to mention was before I get to some other stuff was Moran Monday was missed, so I have a Moran nomination that I read, and I just was like, this is definitely one for the Darwin Awards. Apparently, this college student was enjoying his time in a party van.
Yeah.
A rental party van, and apparently he was, woo, you know? And he decided to go to... The upper deck, so to speak, and he opened the window at the upper deck right before an overpass.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, so no more. Woo!
But
you know, but the thing is, but here's the thing about it. Why do you think with a party van, with all the partying going, why do you need a window at the top?
So idiots can do that?
Yeah, I guess, but, I mean, I would be a little bit...
I wouldn't call that a window at the top. I would call that the natural selection window, David.
Yeah, the natural selection window, indeed. That is definitely something that is that it was brought to his attention rather swiftly.
And the precipitously, other thing
is, even. Yeah. And the other story was, now this is the one story that where I make you cringe, Bob, because when I read this, and Sandra, please pay attention because this is real too, and I'm not making it up, I'm not exaggerating. So apparently, in the drug communities, they're doing something with the cocaine, Bob. I didn't know about this.
Oh no.
The cocaine apparently is, they want to save money and they want to get maximum profits, kind of like, I guess, it's the ultimate free market if you think about it. Just like with processed food, processed drugs, people. So apparently, there's some cocaine dealers, I believe, in, I'm not specifically sure where, but, they decided to use a deworming formula and mix it together. You see where this one's going? And apparently when you put deworming formula in cocaine, ladies and gentlemen...
Okay, the cringing has begun.
The cringing has become... It becomes flesh-eating. Yes! It becomes flesh-eating cocaine, you know? Which could be like a Frank Zappa song, if he was alive.
Well, no, and we could just... We can modify the Jackson Brown song, you know, cocaine... It's eating up all my brain, you know.
there you go. Yeah, so I had no idea the people in the drug business and in the pharmacy business, so to speak, were using.
I like to call it the better living through chemistry business.
Better living through chemistry, yes, and that's another sign of a road sign to the apocalypse, right there. I think. And
I just got to ask, David.
Yeah.
Where'd you find that? What bizarre, weird, twisted, sick little niche of the internet did you find where you found out about deworming? And why? No, I mean, next up, why? Does it enhance the buzz? Does it feel good when your brain is dissolving? When your sinuses are being... What?
Well, here's the thing. I go on a lot of hip-hop sites, and a lot of these hip-hop sites, to get the maximum traffic they want, they put up these I guess you could call them special interest shock stories or something. So, and usually it's dealing with the black community, and they try to I guess they try to align that with the hip hop culture that is currently, and a lot of the beef and the drama stories. So I guess it correlates a lot with.
Okay, but okay. So now we go to why. I mean, what's the purpose of it? I'm just flabbergasted.
What do you mean? What's the purpose of what?
Of putting that with your Coke.
Well, here's the thing about it. I think what...
Or is that just a new and cheap form of cut, and they've moved over from Tide and Comet?
I think what's happening, Bob, is you have a lot of people who are not... don't have degrees in chemistry, shall we say. And I think what's happening is everybody just throw the kitchen sink in it, basically, mentality. And like, well, if it works, it works. And a lot of people aren't testing their products, and this is happening, exponentially across the United States, across the world.
I mean, this is something that in his wildest nightmares, Hunter Thompson himself could not have come up with, David.
I know.
Stepping on the Coke with dewormer?
Yeah, I... You know, this is something that's it's worse than hearing about the embalming fluid and the SHRM epidemic that's happening in the South and that kind of thing. I think what we're witnessing, Bob, is everybody, you know, the drug market, for people who think that being a drug dealer is is a lavish business because they see the videos and the movies all this time. Well, in the inner city, it's a little bit different. The clocks are literally at hyper levels for you to maintain, to produce. I was listening to stories about when Jay-Z was on the corner and how many hours he would spend literally just, you know, for $15 or $20, $20 to $30, bags of crack here and there. And he would literally spend like days and nights on this one corner, and this is how he was formulating his rhymes on the back of paper bags. And really, what they do is they work them like you wouldn't believe. I mean, it is like it is in a way like the Fields mentality, but the numbers is just astounding of what people are able to put out in the drug market. It's amazing. But the thing that people need to understand is that it's so, the price is so high through everything. I mean, not just what they're selling, but again, the people's lives are literally become, you know, a slave to just go out there and sell this, and then you have the paranoia. I mean, it's insanity is what it is, and that's why so many people, you know, don't make it past a certain age or anything like that, because you're only bound to mess up because of the fact is you're, you know, if you really want to see what it's like, I guess the best representation of it would be watch a season of The Wire or something.
Well, yeah, that's what I was thinking of immediately. And I have to tell you, your brother in the fraternity of David's, David in Tennessee, who has a long and varied history, some of which has to do with running around with rock and roll bands.
Yeah,
not running around, actively involved in the business of rock and roll, and so he's seen his fair share of impaired musicians, shall we say?
Yeah.
He just wrote in something that got me thinking. You know, if you do that stuff long enough, you will quite likely, sooner or later, begin to experience what have been commonly referred to as the Coke bugs. You know, when you just feel like you got little bugs all over you.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe the dewormer goes in to kill the Coke bugs, because David in Tennessee just wrote, "You need to consider the bliss and joy, Bob, of living worm free while speeding like an MF-er."
You know, I think David has a point there, and you know, it's that moment where you take a moment before you shake your head and you say dewormer and cocaine.
Yeah, then, right.
You have to see. This is the thing that I was talking about. And this is the broader point that I'm making. the demand of these drugs that people are making and the demand that's on the street and the demand that they needed at that instant now to compete with the other dealers in the other areas, that's why there's so many chemicals. They don't hire the right people, professionally speaking.
Well, and let's throw something else into this mix.
Yeah.
Because the illegal illicit drug trade is the ultimate manifestation of the capitalist free market.
Right. Right.
No restraints, no laws, no regulation. The only thing keeping the, for instance, dewormer out of the coke is the goodwill of the businessman. They're drug dealers. Well, you know what? What they are Ayn Randian free market business people. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, would fit in just fine.
That's the whole thing about it. It is the whole business model does mirror that in so many ways.
I mean, the next time you hear, oh, I don't know, Chinless Mitch McConnell, Eric Leave Britney Alone Cantor, John Orange Crush Boner, any of these freaks talking about the free market, we need to understand. I mean, we've got to sort of rewire our ears and brains, if you will, David, because we've got to understand how to translate what they're talking about. What they're saying when they, for instance, this bill that's banging around the House now, it's been fast-tracked. H.R. 2018 gives the states, it's a states' rights bill, final say on rules concerning water, wetlands, and mountaintop removal. Okay? In other words, if the EPA said, stop it now, this bill would allow the states to go, nah, at the EPA, which West Virginia would do in a heartbeat, even knowing that it kills people when they do it, as we discussed last night.
Yeah.
What this thing does, you know, this is being touted by House Transportation and Infrastructure Chairman John Mica, a pig licking from Florida, and Nick Rahal, of my congressman, overturning almost 40 years of federal legislation by preventing the EPA from protecting public health and water quality. That Nick Rahal wants the power to keep poisoning people. Let's get that straight. And he's supposedly a Democrat, right?
Right.
Well, I mean, this is that. This is that. You know, I don't want no that EPA. It's regulating. Them EPA regulating is interfering with the free market capitalism that Jesus died on the cross to give all of us. It's the same thing as stepping on coke. Okay, it's the same process as a heroin merchant or a crack dealer or a meth lab. It's the same thing, David.
Oh, I know, and that's why the Democrats do this to their peril when they endorse on the bottom line. They say, well, we don't want the wealthy to have everything, but we still need to have that free market sensibilities, basically. I mean, that's, and then you just can see the GOP high-fiving in the background. They did it again! Yes!
Yeah.
I mean, that's the problem. That's the problem I have with, that's the problem I have with the whole, with just basically the whole Democratic Party, continuing to, endorse this free market system when, you know, really what we should do is we should have a tax on these corporations. If they're going to be, see, this is what we do. We change our trade laws, and then we tax these corporations when they bring the products to the United States. And guess what, Bob? That economic engine would start up in a hurry.
Yeah.
But you see,
complicated.
You have to wonder. Okay, so how many people do not want this that are supposed to be our quote-unquote betters? Why is the economic engine? Why aren't they in a an aggressive mode to, we saw the thing with Van Jones this week, and props to that man for coming out and going across the circuit for the TV. I think.
Yeah.
But you know what, Bob? Even he has those moments where you just want to do the facepalm when he says, I want to debate Glenn Beck.
Like, no.
No, you don't want to because he's not legitimate. You don't debate legitimate people. You know, it was like when I was watching Fareed Zakaria and I was watching Elliot Spitzer and all of a sudden right to the side was Ann Coulter and I was like, are you kidding me? Why would you have her on? Her book is crap. She's not even legitimate, and the fact that Elliot Spitzer has to have a debate with her is insane. See, that's the problem, Bob. We left the door open, or we left the window open, or a floorboard. You know, for these Republicans, it was probably a floorboard or a hole in the wall, and they just came right through. We didn't patch it up.
God.
And I just wanted to... you know, the other thing I wanted to mention was, have you been following at all the drama that's unfolding for people who haven't been following the whole LOLSEC news stories that are coming out, like every single day?
No, what?
Well, LOLSEC is the new hacker crew on the block. Anonymous was the one that was getting the attention. And LOLSEC was, they hacked into Sony and they got 1 million passwords and accounts. They also did a lot of different, independent gaming companies. But here's the interesting thing. Last night, you can't make this up. They hacked the Arizona Police Department because they want to get serious about, I guess the FBI is on their trail. Or something like that, and they wanted to make like a hacktivism statement, so they hacked the Arizona Police Department, and they came out with something, a lot of documents, a lot of informant names, a lot of basically classified information that was on their website, and now the Arizona Police are trying to look into it and see what they can do about it. But the thing about it that's funny about it is the operation is called Chinga La Minga, which means F the Border Patrol in slang. And so, yeah, this crew, if you go on Twitter, they're LULZSEC. You can see they have over 200,000 followers. They were just on The Daily Show last night. I mean, they were just talking about them on The Daily Show. But anyways, the big news about it is the fact that they formed a partnership with Anonymous, and they're going to do this thing called AntiSec, which I have some real misgivings about. They're actually planning to break into on this day, I think it's on Sunday or Monday, government sites all around the world and steal as much classified information as you can. So what we're seeing here, people, is the uptick of what WikiLeaks was about. And suddenly hacker crews realize how they can get fame and notoriety by hacking government sites in partnerships.
Wow. I think this whole movement is going to get ugly and quite interesting.
I know they're going to they're going to change the laws, but before I go, I did want to say one thing about the this is something that Albert will find funny. In one of the documents, Bob, they mention a they mention a interesting drug substance referred to as the spice. And I quote: "Recent information developed by the patrol division has indicated powder forms of the chemical components of the substance known as spice have been ordered over the internet, primarily from overseas sources, and possibly shipped to local post office boxes. The chemical components of spice are diluted in water to form a paste-like substance and then applied to regular cigarettes. After drying, the cigarettes could be smoked to gain the effect of the spice. Upon casual observation, this method of ingestion, which would make it appear that individuals would be smoking regular cigarettes. Officers should exercise extreme caution when handling regular cigarettes. The spice solution would be water-soluble and easily absorbed through bare skin on contact. Officers should pay attention to regular cigarettes for the possibility of spice contamination and be aware of any potential criminal activity.
Whoa. And, you know, Chris, psychotic, has just shot me a message a minute ago. He says, fun stuff coming out of Russia. And you know, when we see all these things, you know, it's not just pure consumer. It's not people. Human beings have altered their reality for just about as long as we've been human beings. I mean, there are animals that alter their reality by eating certain things, and they know when they eat them, they go sideways. But you have to ask about why it is that so many people need, you know, and, you know, here I am, nicotine addict, you know, I like my tequila, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, the only drug I've given up so far that with any great effect is caffeine. But people need to feel the need to alter their reality based on the world around them. So Chris writes, fun stuff coming out of Russia. Crocodile, otherwise known as crocodile.
Yeah.
Is an opiate cooked out of gasoline, paint thinner, hydrochloric acid, and red phosphorus, plus the key ingredient codeine. And I don't have the rest of it. He said, according to pharmacology, the stuff is 10 times harder than... And Chris quit writing. But probably heroin.
You know, I just want to say one thing to that. Bob...
But, you know, I'm wondering, you know, you mentioned the spice, like Ron and Raleigh. I just wonder if we're going to be able to fold space, or is it going to make us grow great big eyebrows like Thufir Hawat?
Yeah, I mean, but... You
God, we're geeking tonight on the porch, aren't we? I mean, we're deep we're deep into the Dune geekery.
The drugs are getting awfully pretentious. You have to wonder what's next. Dolphin squeals? For God's sakes.
I know.
It's goddamn ridiculous. I mean,
well, but then again, you know, go back to that animated semi entertaining film, A Scanner Darkly, Philip K. Dick.
Yeah.
You know that was all about designer drugs that were pure emotions, joy, anger, hatred, bliss. You remember
Alex,
that? Well, that
Alex
you know,
Jones.
That's where we're going.
He was a drug in it, actually. You know.
Yeah.
If you think about it, the whole information wars in the prison. I mean, he sells himself like a drug. You need me.
I'm national.
Yeah, I mean that's basically.
I'm bad. I'm nationwide.
I
know.
I did want to mention one last thing. What was your take on the whole? That Russell Simmons thing, that's gonna get so many people just like.
I've gotta digest that some more. I heard Malloy talking about that last night. I was like, what the hell?
But you know what this is probably is. He's positioning himself to do some business with Fox.
Right. I mean, the guy's a marketer par excellence, right?
Yeah. I mean, he is one of the king marketers in regarding culture and brands, and. But still, to say that Hannity was honest, are you kidding me? How can you tell somebody's honest by talking to him who you disagree with?
But did I read something? Okay, I mean, there's that, and that made me squeal a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I've seen Russell Simmons on Bill Maher and stuff like that. The guy's a businessman, okay? He's a businessman.
Right, right.
But what do you do... What do you do? I mean, is this true? And I don't like to criticize my fellow liberal talkers unless it's, you know, well, you know him. I'm national.
Yeah.
But did I'm just asking.
Yeah.
Because I like him. And I respect him. And he's got a great mind. Did Tom Hartman really say, I've known Neil Bortz for 15 years, and Neil Bortz is not a racist?
You know,
I mean, you listen to the show. I don't. I don't have time. I'm doing show prep, running around, leading a life, and stuff like that. But, you know, other people... Did he really say that?
I think I missed that, but I can see... I can literally see Tom Hartman saying that because he always wants to... He has this altruistic nature, and he always wants to find some good in somebody, and I think that's the problem.
Well, so did Anne Frank, and they put her in the oven anyway.
I know. It's when you have that bad combination of somebody incredibly intelligent and then at the same time just blindly optimist, like, oh, how you doing, Satan? Come here and sit down.
Oh, you hate me? Wait a minute, wait a minute. You hate me, but we can find
well,
some dialogue.
Well, you know, bless
here.
His heart. I had a conversation when we screened The Last Mountain up in Minneapolis. There was a guy there whose work I really, really respect. I met him there, and he's a nice guy. But he pursued this line of questioning about why can't Massey Energy, or Alpha as it is now, why can't they be persuaded that the smart thing to do is to expand their portfolio into wind and solar?
Mm.
And and you try to explain to them that their entire financing model is based on mountaintop removal, not putting up solar panels or windmills.
Right.
But it's also a matter of fact that they like what they're doing, that what they're doing maximizes profit. That it's very, you know, it's very low tax, and that they are not going to stop it unless they are compelled to stop it until they move out voluntarily and just leave a wasteland behind them. But there are always going to be, and I respect that optimism, David. I hope you understand, and I hope everybody does. I respect that optimism. You know, here at the Horn, we have a resident optimist, and I really respect what Preston brings to the table.
Right, right.
But by the same token, there's optimism, and then there's optimism like what Preston has, and then there is I'm trying not to be mean about this because I don't want to come off that way. There's optimism,
gullibility,
and then there's gullibility. Thank you, David.
Okay.
But and I mean, is there a bright line distinction between the two? I think so.
You know what? It was interesting. The thing with Tom Hartman is he gets all these people on his program that really, to me, in my honest opinion, have earned their right to be kicked to the curb. at least.
Well,
forever.
Where Hartman is concerned, by the way, Ron and Raleigh just wrote in and say, did he say that? Why, yes, he did. He also said he believed, pursuant to Marbury versus Madison, that Brown versus Board of Education was wrongly decided. I'm going to have to take a while. It's going to take me a while on that one. It's none of my business how anybody else runs their show, but I will say this about having right-wingers on. And it's the same argument that I've made time and time again, and I think apparently it's time I made it again.
Right.
I remind people, for every hour of me or Malloy or Rick Smith or any other liberal talker, for every hour of all of us, Hartman included, Stephanie Miller, Randy Rhodes, Ed, I'm National, Schultz, for every hour of all of us aggregated, Nicole Sandler, everybody, for all of us aggregated into one little lump, for all of us together, for every hour we do, there are 1,000 hours of blithering, blathering, hate-filled, venom-spewing right-wingers. And we do not have time. We do not have the luxury of the time to give those freaks air. You know, it's like what you said about Van Jones wanting to debate Glenn Beck. No! You don't legitimize them that way. I mean, if I wanted to, I could have a right-winger on this program and debate him or her every night. And I would win. 100% of the time, for a variety of reasons. But why am I even going to allow them to spread their filth? You know, there's an old joke about a tourist who's out at a dude ranch or whatever, and he's out taking his morning stroll, and he sees a farmer coming toward him, and the farmer's got his wagon hitched to his mules, and there's something really odious coming off the back of the wagon. He says, "Mister, what in the world are you pulling there?" And he says, "Well, son, it's a farm load. It's a wagon load of manure." And the guy looks at him and says, "What are you going to do with it? It sure stinks."
Yeah.
And the farmer says, "I'm going to put them on my strawberries." And the city slicker dude gets this amazed look on his face and says, "Well, you ought to come to where we are. We get sweet cream to put on ours." You know, there's a disconnect. There's a fundamental lack of understanding.
I cringed when Van Jones said, "Into my beloved brother Glenn Beck." I'm not misquoting. My what?
No, I'm okay with that part. Because that's the world and the mindset that Van lives in. That's
right.
The walk he walks, and therefore the talk he talks. But just because he is your beloved brother does not mean that you give your beloved brother a chance to stand before you and call you Hitler.
Well, the other
because
thing
it
is,
serves no purpose.
Your brother, if he is your brother, doesn't turn you into a bait decoy for ideological gain. And that's literally what Van Jones became.
And he was slimed. He was slimed out of his position.
Right.
And he was, you know, he resigned, but there's no doubt in anybody's mind that he was asked to leave.
Right.
Because the Obama administration was afraid to fight back. Just like they were afraid to fight back when they prematurely shit-canned Shirley Sherrod. That was done out of fear. And you cannot successfully politic from a position of fear. But, you know, that's me and I'm crazy. Hey, David, got a bunch of blinkers. I got to run along, but it's been a great call.
All right, Bob, later.
All right, take care. Have a great weekend.
Bye.
Bye now. David, our pop culture correspondent. And who but our pop culture correspondent could find out that they're stepping on the Coke with deworming meds? Oh, jeebus. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Fear is the mind killer, Bob.
The little death.
That's right. You can't negotiate from that position. Oh, boy, it's been a show and a half. I've really enjoyed listening to it. It's something else. Let me tell you, real quick, I just wanted to hit the spice. Now, we all know what spice is. Spice is cannabis, okay? What else can you eat? What else can you make clothing out of and everything, all the spice material, whatever, spice plastics and spice this and spice that. Anyone who read the book is going to see it pretty clearly. It powers your engines, right? Diesel Rudolph, right? Come on. Okay, so, but the spice that he's talking about is JWH-013, okay? And it's basically a THC, synthesized THC. It's dangerous, don't touch it. Just might as well get for the real thing, which also leads me right into the other aspect regarding what are we talking about here? Slave labor, prison labor. Oh, delicious, isn't it? My goodness, delicious. And why do you think those ladies are in prison?
Oh, any number. Yeah, pot. welfare fraud, maybe. The kind of crimes that a government manufactures to up the population inside a private for-profit prison industry, as we talked about last night.
That's right. And what do we got? You know it's coming to an end. It's coming to an end. It is. Support your. Tell these gutless bastards that you support them. And just one more thing I just got to say before I lose, because I've been on a little bit. Chris, my goodness. I thought I was hearing myself a few years ago. I heard the child talking about it. And, you know, like we shouldn't, you know, just here's the difference. A little younger than me, it sounds. But the other thing is, that's the difference between the Canadian education system, right? He's from Canada, right?
Right.
And the United States education system is the vocabulary and the vernacular we get to use. And it just flows out of you, beautiful Chris. Just keep going, brother. It's going to happen. There's no reason anyone needs $1 billion.
None.
If you can't do it, because if he can have a billion, I can make a nuclear weapon. Okay? Is that fair? A megaton. Why not? A megaton. That's a billion times, right? I want that. If he can have that, I can build that, and all I need to build that is some material. And I could probably get it out of Russia, well, along with my spice. My want to be.
Or your crocodile.
Or my crocodile. Or how about this one? Jenkum. Anyway. Yeah, go Google that one. Anyway.
You'll forgive me if I don't. I've got enough of the creeping horrors out of the dewormer as it is, Albert.
Yeah, that's another one. They've actually been doing that for quite some time. And that's a hideous thing. You know, he was talking, it was funny, because he was talking about how, you know, these ghetto dudes, they don't know nothing about no chemistry. They're just cutting it, right? And they can get this crap, this insecticide, this dewormer real cheap. So they're cutting it, and they're actually doing it in Mexico. See, and I think that should just enlighten us all as to how those little gorilla labs in the middle of the Amazon and all the other places where they grow the cocaine, the coca, where they process that. Where do you think they got that backyard method for extracting something that normally would take a lab? But how do you think they, where do you think they got that? And then how did, you suppose those gangbangers in L.A. that went down to Columbia and said, hey, guys, you're growing all this coca. Hey, I'll tell you, here's my recipe. Let's take the extractor.
No,
okay.
Not hardly.
No, they weren't doing that. Okay, so, who was doing that again? I don't know, some three-letter word. I mean, I'm sure many people are just screaming at the radio. It's CIA! I mean, come on now. We all know where the drug war comes from and where it goes and where it ends to. It ends to slavery, sitting there going after people.
It ends in a watermelon patch in Arizona.
Exactly. That's where it ends.
Well, you know, look, I mean, you know what a total geek I am for ancient American history, right?
Yes, sir.
And you know I'm a hopeless fan of Tony Bourdain.
Yes,
and anybody who knows about Tony Bourdain knows that he's a recovering junkie. And yes, you know, I mean, I'm not saying anything bad. He'll tell you. He says it all over his books. He writes about it. So there's an episode where he goes to Peru. And he gets a little wad of coca leaves around a piece of lime rock, tucks it between his cheek and gum, and suddenly he can walk up and down those hills at 12,000 feet without a problem.
Yes, sir. It's got a purpose, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. The peoples of that region have used it for millennia. That little leaf literally enabled a civilization that stretched from what is now modern-day Colombia to what is now modern-day Tierra del Fuego. They built roads. They carved massive stone block edifices that you to this day cannot slide a playing card between. And they didn't use cement or mortar.
No.
Okay.
Ridiculous.
And they were able to do so because they were able to breathe the air with the aid of that. Mm-hmm. And never in all the history of all of those Andean peoples do you find any reference or any hint of a reference to them trying to turn that leaf into anything other than what that leaf was.
Mm-hmm.
But Whitey comes along, long about the middle of the 19th century, and says, what happens if we crush this up and pour some kerosene on it? And sort of ferment it and stew it, and look, we get this white powder, and the next thing you know, Sigmund Freud's got his nose on a mirror, and suddenly every little boy on the planet wants to do mama.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a dot-by-dot line, Albert.
Well, brother, well, look, you remember that, it's a true story, you know, the Air America film with Mel Gibson back when he wasn't so crazy.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. What company were they working for? I mean, what was the soda company? It was the big one. Right? They might have made it some whatever magic, but you know everyone knows what it is.
Yeah.
It's Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola. They're the ones. Or Pepsi. It doesn't matter, right? Pepsi or Coca, right? And what's the magic ingredient in Coca-Cola right now? Right? Coca-Cola is actually one of the biggest purchasers of coca leaf. And what they'll do, right, is where they get the synthetic, the Novocaine and the lanocaine that they put in your sun spray. Right? Well, that's what it is. It's a cane drug, and that comes from that.
But what Procaine, they do, they Novocaine, Lidocaine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Ambisol. You know, but and it helps. It's got its purpose in terms of pharmaceutical. But, you know, they need it for their special ingredient for what have you. And maybe they don't even need it anymore. But that's what they used to use. And everyone.
Yeah, well, that. Yeah. The coca leaves came out of Coca-Cola along about 1910. But that didn't stop the mythos because, you know, even up to when I was a little boy, there were little old ladies in Alabama who every day would drink a 6.5-ounce bottle of Coca-Cola and take aspirin. Because it just pepped them up.
Yeah, the cocaine was taken out back then. But the leaf, you go find, you go look, Rick, the extract, it's in the extract. This leaf extract is still there. Not without no coca, it won't make your tongue numb, but it's still there in that recipe. I'm telling you. And they still get it. Why not? It's so easy to get them. They're in every country in the whole wide world. How does Europe get cocaine? The same way
there's no land. Heroin. Yeah, there's no land bridge from the Bogota to no.
Yeah, the same way we get heroin. You know, we all know where. You sit there and you look, right? We got, you know, Rush Limbaugh with his little pill addiction, and we see that's just the tip of the iceberg. You know, if anybody wants to check out, I'll tell you one thing. I do have to give this a little bit of credit. And then I just remember something why I called in. Because every time I turn the friggin' news on, I see something else about Wisconsin that makes me shameful that I live here. But anyway, hang on real quick. I hadn't even forgotten. Now I see it. This is what I mean. I thought about Ron Johnson. Took my beloved, my pride and joy in the Senate. All right, he's not perfect. But Russ Feingold. This bastard beat Russ Feingold, which is just shameful. Because he was actually somebody that, you know, well, we all respected, I would imagine, didn't we? Hey, we might not agree with him on everything, but didn't we respect Russ Feingold?
Yeah.
And now we put Ron Johnson in this? You see what this dude's doing? What did he do? Some bull crap with his campaign finance. He's paying himself back.
Right, out of his corporation. But hey, you know, it's the new thing. All the cool Republican kids are doing it. You know, Rick Scott deeded over his drug testing corporation to his lovely wife just in time to pass a bill that forces all welfare recipients in the state of Wisconsin, or I mean the state of Florida, to pay the corporation to have their pee-pee tested.
Drug test. I'm telling you people right now. You remember how long I've been saying? The drug war is a symbolic issue to me. It just undermines everything. Pull that pin. And everyone's going to go, hey, hang on, it's legal now? Hey, why don't we have solar panels and windmills everywhere? The drug war. Why are we hiring people? Oh, man, I ain't buying that crap at Walmart. The drug war. I'm telling you. It's just the most, it's the bloody heart. It's the video, in the video game, the big giant boss monster. That's the target you gotta shoot at. You shoot at that and the rest of the bullcrap will come tumbling down. You watch.
Well, the other night in a rare moment when the History Channel wasn't, running a reality program or something, they actually had like 2 or 3 hours on cannabis. You know, A to Z, Alpha to Omega, history of beginning to end. And there was this little statistic tucked in the middle of it all, Albert, that when Nixon declared the war on drugs, a couple of years later, they surveyed high school students. I think it was 1978. And in 1978, 50% of American high school students admitted to having at least tried cannabis. Now, I would make an argument that high schoolers don't need to be trying cannabis. But as long as it's a free, open, capitalist, Ayn Randian market, they're gonna. Because there are no rules and no regulations.
That's right.
Okay, so in 1978, 50% of American high school students admit having tried cannabis. At least tried it. Flash forward to 2008. That's 30 years. That's a generation. The kids who in 1978, 50% of whom said they had tried cannabis in high school, have grown up and they have kids of their own now who are in high school, who were surveyed, who said to the tune of, once again, no, I'm sorry, 48% that they too had tried cannabis. Okay, now...
Admit.
admit. It's like that old joke, 50% of men admit to masturbating, the other 50% are lying. Yeah, it's that thing.
Yeah.
So what we, and in that 30 years, we have spent probably, I would be surprised if it's a lower number, something approaching $1 trillion.
Yes, sir.
$1 trillion interdicting, yes, and when you've got to haul out a word like interdict, you know you're on slippery ground.
Yes, sir.
So we've spent something around $1 trillion, if not more, interdicting drugs. And we had ourselves a war on drugs. And Nancy Reagan said, just say no. Where's my Librium? I need a drink. We spent $1 trillion in 30 years to knock down the admit to trying cannabis number by 2%.
And in all honesty,
can we run the white flag up on the war on drugs real quick? I mean, just saying.
I mean, if we don't, it's our problem. I mean, it's our fault. I mean, it's the number one cash crop in the country. It's the number one cash crop in the country. It's more than it's like almost KRS-One coming out and saying, "I'm number one." No, wait, I'm sorry, I'm lied. I'm number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. It's more than a bunch of things, all in corn. I mean, it's more than all of it. It's like more than 2 and 3 combined. It's ridiculous. Yeah, you're trying to tell me how many people? How many? I mean, you know, you sit there and you think, all that waste, it's illegal. So true, if when it's legal, it'll be a little cheaper. an illegal, we're wasting tax dollars fighting something that generates more than corn and this and
you know what scares the daylights out of me, though, Albert?
Yes, sir.
Because I will leave, you know, I will leave the optimism to others.
Yes, sir.
What scares the daylights out of me, I got three words for you. And this will speak to you because of where you live and what grows all around you. Roundup ready cannabis.
You know what? You know what? I ain't even worried about Monsanto. You see the way that the people, hey, there are some bigger farms here and there, but they don't need Monsanto, and you know that. You see all the little nooks and cranny farms around here. I ain't worried about Monsanto. I ain't worried about Monsanto-ready cannabis. They ain't going to be able to touch it. There are 30,000 varieties, and it's been globally illegal since, what, 58? There's how many varieties? The snozzberries taste like
snozzberries.
How did they do that? And it's illegal. How? That's impossible. Oh, you wait till it's legal. The underground is so much further. It's the same thing with the hackers. You know, and the hackers, what are they doing? They're going and they're doing what WikiLeaks has been almost sort of forbidden to do, and they've been handicapped. Where WikiLeaks was handicapped, boom, there they're coming. And they realize, the one thing that I understand about, the hackers have an innate, even though a lot of them are assholes, they really are, they're just the biggest assholes you ever meet. Hello, you mad? Look, you know, their little internet meme regurgitations that just drive you nuts. But the one thing they do have is this innate sense of justice. And what they're saying is, I mean, we wouldn't have any of this other thing. This is another thing I kind of have to get into. I have to get into Libya, brother. I have to get in there. We have to get in there. We have to. We have to talk about this. You know, it makes me absolutely insane for this this one reason. No matter where you stand on it, when you hear the amount of people that are so upset about Barack Obama throwing some missiles into Gaddafi's face, you hear all this and you're like, wow, you guys don't want to be in there. You don't want to be in Afghanistan either? Of course you don't want to be in Iraq. Why in the hell weren't you voting for Dennis Kucinich?
Well, there's that.
Because what it sounds like to me, that's what you really want in your heart of hearts, is a guy like that. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. But next time, maybe, guys, maybe you can just say, hey, you know what? I'm going to vote for that short one. Ah, no, that guy with that douchebag hairdo parted to the right. No, I'm not voting for him. That short little guy that reuses tea bags and has got a pretty hot wife, I'm voting for him. Can you imagine if the way that even the so-called left were against the way that they were and they would be behind Kucinich like they were against Obama? Can you imagine what this world would like? We would definitely have Star Trek coming. There'd be no doubt about it, because every day you hear something new about solar technology, people, they're doing it. The AMP project, they're putting solar panels on every roof. Now I'm going to go get a job. Now that's something that I want to do. I don't want to make Pepsi and whatever else and jerk off bulls for bull semen. I want to do something that's going to make a difference in this freaking world. That's the kind of job that we need to have people in this country make. So when all of a sudden we turn around and we put the last solar panel in, and somebody can sit back and go, oh my God, we are energy freaking independent, and we're not putting out a goddamn single molecule of carbon dioxide. That is the future we need to go towards.
Smells like freedom.
Yeah, that smells like freedom to me. And once we get there, we ain't going to need money like we need it today. The further and further we go down this path, the less and less we're going to need this money. And that's the whole thing. I want to kneecap everybody that wants $1 billion. What the hell you need $1 billion for? You know nothing makes ticker in my stomach and in my soul to sit there and think somebody with $1 billion. And then nobody gets to tax them because one day they think they're going to have that. I'd gouge an eye out if that wasn't true. I would. I mean, you know, $1 billion. No, we need to move past this paradigm. And the only way we're going to get there is technology. And we're there. We're getting there. We're every day, Bob. It really is. And it's a beautiful thing to sit. What did they see? How long have I been talking about this? And everyone can make fun of me in this. I don't even care. What did they find out? What did they admit they find out in space? oh, giant lightning bolt, 1 to the 38th power lightning bolt, whatever, coming out of a galaxy, right? Like, oh, look, Huffington Post, right there. Lightning bolts in space. Nikolai Tesla knew that in 1911. And he tapped into that. And he sent that power to Los Angeles at a 2% loss. That's unbelievable. And J.P. Morgan said, how are you going to charge for it? And he said, we're not. And he said, oh, yeah? Lights off.
Goodbye.
And then we've been stuck in this paradigm of coal and oil and fighting for oil and wasting the last drops of oil to fight for wars that are just going to get us the last drops of oil. It's just a waste, and I can just feel it in my heart. I can feel it in my chest, and I hope other people can. That's the kinds of things we need to be projecting.
The spice must flow, Albert. The spice must flow.
The spice will flow. And it will. We have to get there. There's no doubt about it. We have to. We're not this stupid.
You know what I'm going to do? You know what I'm going to do when the show's over? Pardon me, just a sec.
Okay.
I really refuse to sneeze at the Horn family. Wait a minute.
Oh. Good.
All better now. When the show is over, I'm going to take $7.
Mm.
And I'm going to put, because there's been so many Dune references tonight, I don't have it on my Kindle.
Mm.
And I'm going to put it on my Kindle. Because I need it there. And I'm going to hand the Kindle to Ferg and Margie. Agnes has read it. I've read it. God knows. And you know, this is not like you and me sitting here saying, oh, dude, did you catch that part on page 251 of Dianetics? No. No. Dune is, you know, if Animal Farm is a metaphor of communism, well, Dune is a metaphor. I mean, there's a lot of philosophy in there, and it's a metaphor of evolution, but there's also a metaphor of capitalism.
True.
I mean, who represents a better capitalist than Baron Harkonnen?
Exactly. And he had buddies.
Yeah.
And who represents a better... There is no ism for the future that we have. But the future definitely lies in the Atreides. You know, they don't have to regulate all these guys. They pay. They pay the Fremen correctly. You know, they go and they'll risk their own son's life to save the Fremen on their miner. And the damn with the machine. The humans have to come back. These are our workers. And that's how you build loyalty. And that's how you win wars. And that's how we actually get out to where we need to go. Is by being human. By being the correct human. The human that everyone knows you should be. That's why we call ourselves brothers. And that's how Van Jones can call a pig disgusting piece of shit like Glenn Beck a brother. And he is, but he's still our brother, and that's a sad thing. But hopefully we have some hope for him. He's a little young brother. He's the, you know, the stepchild brother.
Under-evolved, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, he's the... But, I mean, there's hope, man. You look at my hedges out front, now they got all these beautiful little white flowers, and there's honeybees all over them. There's still always hope. There is. And even in these dark hours, and as I said last time, let these banks fail. Let these people fail. Because that will enable enough space for the CSAs, right? You know, the cooperative, you know, farming things, and where, you know, you go into your farm and you say, I don't care. I don't want Monsanto ready corn. I want nice, fresh, wholesome, organic vegetables. And you tell a farmer to grow that. I'll tell you what. I could show you a bunch of farmers that grow that crap. And I can show you a bunch of farmers that grow organic vegetables. They get their hands in the dirt, and they get to pick the bok choy and all the other celerac and vegetables you never even imagined.
Right, and they don't have to use prison labor to do it.
And they don't use prison labor to do it. Not only that, they get volunteers to come down to do it, but they also get people. You just see that there's a difference in their being as the Amish drive by in front of my house. You see that there's a difference in their being. They feel better. They're more proud of themselves. And these are the kinds of things that we need to revitalize in our American.
And see, put that, you know, contrast that, Albert, to what David in Tennessee said a little bit ago. He said, what Repiglicans think. He said, what they think and actually believe is that gated communities can protect them from radioactivity.
Oh, boy. right.
And as Jerry Seinfeld said, good luck with all that.
Yeah, good luck with all that, no doubt. That, no. They got to wake up. I'm telling you, and you see them, and you see them, and they just keep rambling and rambling and rambling, and they don't have anything under their feet. They really, really don't. And anytime we give them anything under their feet, they, man, they shoot off with it, don't they? Look at the white. Look what happened with Wiener. Right? Look at that. Boom, they're off with it. Boom, they're off with it. We can't give these people anything, not a molecule to stand on. They need to be in a total vacuum.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, while I was still on the road, I hung on to this because it just struck me as being so profound. I got a note from Reverbo. And Reverbo, there's a confraternity here of all of these ideas bouncing around inside the horn space.
Yes, sir.
And so I get this note from Reverbo, and he said, the subject line says, not much going on around here. How about you? And he says, yawn. The dog days of summer. Lazy, sleepy, everyone taking it easy. Look at this. Anthony Weiner's going to take it a little slower from now on while David Vitter is still cashing our paychecks. I guess there's a feel-good thing about the Dems. It's not okay if you're a Democrat. It's a swell ethical distinction. I'll agree. The thing is, are the people who've been waiting around for some real action in the mood to give them medals for this anymore? I'll answer that with a no, if I may. At this point, they just give medals to each other. All we want is to roll up our sleeves and fight. A few miles away, the Syrian government is busily violently eliminating their little summer protest problem, while over in Libya, Muammar Gaddafi, not a good-looking man, in fact, compared to him, Manuel Noriega is fairly attractive, Google image both for a real horror show, has vowed to mow down his entire population or die trying. Well, it's really hot over there in June, and tempers can flare, you know. And how is everything going on in Iraq and Afghanistan? Making progress? No? You can always depend on our good friends the Pakis, though, and they can depend on us. Like I once wrote, says Reverbo, it's sure nice to see us still entangled in oil, guns, and drugs in 2011, ain't it? And what's that precarious-looking line over there? You can just make that out through the waves of Wall Street heat. Oh, that's the stock market teetering.
Let it. Let it. That's beautiful. 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 I love it. Let it teeter. Let it completely collapse. Let people sit there and realize, oh, my God, I can stand up. We can do this, people. Co-ops, get together. Get together and you know, we are the roots of the plant. That's us, not the bonsai tree.
We have used the word, maybe this is another one to go on Sandra's list, but we have used the word grassroots so much that it has lost its currency, Albert. The grassroots are the things, I mean, if we just sit and think about it for a minute, you know, you just said it, we are the roots.
The roots.
The grassroots are those things. Anybody ever tried to eliminate the dandelions from their yard? The grassroots are the things that stay in the soil and come up no matter how hard you try to eliminate them. It's not that they're more real. It's just that they're there and they are persistent.
Maybe we're even a little bit of the soil, too.
Exactly. Exactly. We're the grassroots. We're the taproot. We're the thing that goes deep and deeper until we find the source and bring that energy to the surface.
Mm-hmm. Some of us are the mycelium. And some of us are the nematodes, and some of us are this and that, but no matter what, we don't get much further above ground level. We're all here together, and there's nothing we can do about it. We have to work together. We have to be synergistic. We have to do this.
The planet, let's work the Dune metaphor one more time, Albert, because the planet has the Gamja Bar poised at our neck.
Yes, sir. And yeah, it's painful. It is painful. But if we let fear be the mind, we let it run its course. We don't do the litany of fear. We don't just let it pass through us. And we react. We're dead. We're done. It doesn't matter who wins. It doesn't matter who any or sport teams. Nothing. We're done. Yes, there should be a moratorium on ocean fishing now. And everyone should, I mean, I know that's a little radical. Oh, fishing. If the ocean dies, we die. Think about that for a minute. Is that worth that tuna that's in a freaking can for 69 cents at Wally World? At Wart Mart? Really? You want some toothless, slack-jawed, moronic Republican to sit there and eat some, let me eat my last tuna? You want that? I don't think so. We need these things. The ocean needs the most diverse ecosystem there is. It's got, at every level, there's life. And we need to be more like that. We need to give that damn ocean a break. I mean, look at the oil spill. Oh, my God. In the ocean. And then you look in the film, right? What's that little statistic, right? What fell out, right? All that leaking of all them slurry basins they have there filled, right, with the little dams, right?
Yep.
When that thing spilled and collected, what was that? Four times what was spilled in on land. Four times what was spilled in the Gulf. That wipes my mind.
It's
a gutman wipe. I can't even get the words out. It's so horrifying. People, The Last Mountain. Watch it and show it to everyone you know. And don't be, if you're going to be an evangelical. Do something that's worth,
Do something worth evangelizing over.
Oh, absolutely. Solar. Win. Let's go. Oh, yeah. I mean, you sit there and you think, right, the Cold River Mountain, they want to put the, it's level 5, category 5, it's as high as it gets. And you can't put windmills like that would be able to generate that when it's rubble, when it's pebbles. It's pebbles. You can't put a windmill.
Yeah, because for starters, a blown-up mountain will not hold the substructure necessary to keep up a wind turbine. Secondly, when you've taken the mountain down 800 feet, it's not in the Cat 5 winds anymore.
I don't know how they sleep at night. I really don't. I really, really, really don't. But I'll tell you what, I guarantee you one thing. If we do come out of this, Bob, if we do wake up and people do come to the way that they are and they're coming to the horn slowly but surely, we get like a snowball. We get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And I hear this more and more and more, right? What did I hear Chris saying? And I hear the little kids in the background. I can't even describe to you how that feels in my heart to hear that. That does me so much good that I can't even tell you. I mean, this is where we need to be going. It's beautiful to hear it more and more, and we're going to win. There's no doubt in my mind we're going to win. We got it. I don't know. It's intrinsic to life. It just is. And to be counter that, to sit there in Monsanto, they can't even kill the weeds anymore, Bob. They can't do it.
No, because the weeds are Roundup ready now, too.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, the weeds don't even care. Well, the weeds don't care. No, they get immune to it. That's what happens, and it's like the antibiotics, right? Oh, you got a sniffle. Huh? Take some Zithromax. No, because now we got MRSA, and you know all well about MRSA. Come on, people. Enough.
Exactly. Albert, have a wonderful weekend.
You too, my brother. Okay, everybody, and everyone on the horn. Beautiful. And give my love to everybody. We'll talk later.
Sure will. Take care, Brother Albert.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. A voice of hope from the sage of Southwest Wisconsin. That's Albert. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Cossack, what's up, man?
Not much. You've been away a good bit lately.
Well, yes, I have, and I'm going to hit the road again on Tuesday, but that, at least we'll have broadcast. We'll have all the PRISM stuff happening between the 29th of June and the 14th of July, and it's going to be terribly, terribly engaging.
PRISM stuff.
Yeah, PRISM. PRISM, West Virginia. PRISM.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, Dr. Bill. You remember Dr. Bill?
Yes.
Yeah, this is his history lecture series, the Summer Academy.
That'll be good. Oh, Bob, you have heard that at Fukushima, they have not just had corn on floor, they have had complete burn-throughs in three of the reactors.
Yes.
They've gone through containment. They're out of containment. China syndrome, anyone?
Yeah, core on the floor. That is China syndrome. Goes straight through to China. Only in their case, I guess, if you draw the line, and what, it goes straight through to...
To us.
Yeah, it's like Chris mentioned last night. Don't get in the rain. From what we know about Fukushima now, the old adage hasn't got sense enough to come in out of the rain.
Yeah.
Takes on a whole new meaning, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, the fact that our idiots have long ago stopped tracking radiation readings in the northwest and on the west coast, what does this tell you?
That we have adopted an ostrich philosophy?
Well, yeah.
And we've adopted a mole in the dark philosophy with regard to Nebraska.
Oh yeah. They've got an inch of freeboard at this point.
An inch.
Inch.
That's not much to hang your hopes on.
No.
I got this in from News Ninja Gene a little bit ago. Comes from Slashdot. A segment of an article at the New York Times which says, pictures of the Fort Calhoun nuclear power plant in north of Omaha show it encircled by the swollen waters of the Missouri River, which reached a height of nearly 1,007 feet above sea level at the plant yesterday. The plant's defenses include new steel gates and other hard barriers protecting an auxiliary building with vital reactor controls and a water-filled berm 8 feet tall that encircles other parts of the plant. Both systems are designed to hold back floodwaters reaching 1,014 feet above sea level. Additional concrete barriers and permanent berms, more sandbags, and another power line into the plant have been added. The plant was shut down in April for refueling and will remain so until the flood threat is passed. Today, the plant is well positioned to ride out the current extreme Missouri River flooding while keeping the public safe, Nuclear Regulatory Commission spokesman Victor Drix said on an agency blog this week. But a year ago, those new defenses were not in place, and the plant's hard barriers could have failed against a 1,010-foot flood, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission contends in a year-long inspection and enforcement action against the plant's operator, the Omaha Public Power District. In other words, not a pretty picture.
No.
Wow.
And also about Fukushima. It looks like one of those explosions they had was actually a fission blast.
Jesus.
That's why they're finding all the plutonium.
Hot spots.
Yeah, hot spots.
Otherwise known as radiation poisoning areas. Hot spots. Jesus.
Radiation nonstop. As Kraftwerk said many years ago, and they had it right.
Yep. Well, you'll get a kick out of this. You know how if you use Google Mail, Gmail, you get ads based on algorithms that quietly read your mail and think they know what it is you're looking for?
Yeah.
So I just opened up News Ninja Gene's article that I just read, and when I went back to the main page of my mail... this is such delightfully horrifying irony. Google informed me that I could go to the Rad Waste Summit, Las Vegas, September 6th through 9th, 2011. The theme for Rad Waste Summit, which is for people involved in radioactive waste management.
Yeah.
The motto for Rad Waste Summit, Las Vegas, 2011, Cossack, is entering a new era.
Yeah.
How about exit stage glow in the dark?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that gets to me. I mean, Fukushima is an ongoing mess. This has not ceased, and yet virtually all the coverage has gone away. Like, nobody wants to know about the fact that Fukushima has already put more than five times the radiation to the atmosphere that Chernobyl did. Bet you the Chinese would be happy to hear that.
Well, which way do the prevailing winds blow?
Depends. Usually ocean-wise, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to say that none of that's going to float toward right.
Yeah, so...
Thank you, GE. We bring good things to light.
light up in the dark. Good God Almighty.
Yeah, it's a little nuts.
I mean, people have lost their minds. You know, this stuff is not, as I keep trying to explain to people, radiation doesn't necessarily kill you right there on the spot. I mean, it does at high enough levels. Like, those workers at Fukushima are going to end up like the workers at Chernobyl did. Sacrifice brigades that ran in there and turned a knob and came out and dropped dead.
I know.
Yeah. We don't understand that that's what's happening to these people. These are the modern day, God, what am I thinking? Dog is driving me crazy, so.
Barbarians at the gates, predators, the cannibals.
The guys at Fukushima are the modern day kamikazes.
Kamikaze pilots, yeah.
Yeah. They're dying for Japan.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it.
And the thing is, about the rich SOBs, it's amazing how quickly Kent Conrad's rather modest proposal, in my opinion, of slapping a surtax on families making more than $1 million a year was voted down. Yeah.
Well, he's lucky he wasn't dragged out in the street and burned as a heretic.
Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't lynch him.
Well, you know, speaking of the rich, I had an email a little while back from Ray, based on what I said at the beginning of the program, about, you know, giving them their way, telling them they don't have to pay taxes anymore, but noting that being a taxpayer is part of what it means to be an American, so they're not that anymore either. Ray wrote in, Cossack, and said, "The Republican ceding their rights to call themselves Americans is right on. If you not only neglect, but kick that which you claim to love in the face, it seems to me you've given up not only the right to call yourself a patriot, but your right to be a member of the human race as well."
Oh, I agree.
It's where they are.
Yeah, they should be branded as non-Americans, because they aren't. These people, the mega wealthy, bear no allegiance to anything other than money.
And yet I saw a post, Sandra sent it to me the other day, I think it came from Matt Iglesias over at Think Progress, and the thrust of it was, quit beating up on the rich.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that was a little tough to stomach. Hey, Cossack, I got to get out of here, brother, but have a wonderful weekend.
All right, you too, Bob.
All right.
Say hi to Agnes and the kids.
Oh, I sure will. You take
all
care.
Right. You too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
The Cossack calling from the wilds of North Florida. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Oh, fancy. What's up?
Oh, okay. Be real quick on this. What was the film that Susan was recommending with Falk?
Let me run down.
Okay, you'll get it.
Griffin and Phoenix.
Oh, okay. Griffin and Phoenix. Okay, want to talk a little bit about communism. And I've told this story before, but it bears repeating since my favorite form of humor is always irony. But I was going to the University of Texas in the early 60s, back when you got your IBM punch card with the holes in it to turn in and get your schedule.
Right.
And wait in the gym there, waiting in line and for summer school. And, of course, summer school is every teacher in the world is going back to upgrade their skills. So in front of me were two lovely little nuns from some community. And back in those days, they still wore habits, and which in Texas in the summer is, talk about. Well, anyway, so I'm listening to these women chat, and we get to a place where we sign the loyalty pledge. And one says to the other, "What is this?" And the other one said, "You sign it, it says you're not a communist." And I'm thinking, what? What's more communistic than cloistered religious communities? Where everything's owned in common.
Well, I mean, didn't St. Paul kind of invent that fancy?
This is,
We held all things in common. Isn't that in his letters?
Oh, yeah. So I found the irony of that situation. Now, communism works in small, voluntary groups. You've got the community farms in Israel. Yep.
Yeah.
We're both losing
the kibbutzes. The kibbutzes.
The kibbutz. The kibbutz.
Yeah. The only way I can ever remember that is it's something similar to looking over somebody's shoulder in a card game and saying, "Play the queen." Kibbutz. Kibbutz.
I'm working on that one. I'll come back. Okay, kibbutzim work because they're voluntary and small, and the trick is everybody knows everybody. So
right.
If somebody, yeah, I lived in a small city once, and virtually the city council every morning ate breakfast at Bob's Bakery, you know, and so you could walk in Bob's Bakery and you'd hear somebody say, you know, look at the city council sitting there at the table having their breakfast, and somebody'd say, "Jim, you haven't done anything about that pothole in front of my house." And this worked well because you knew who was who, and you had a community awareness.
Right.
And when Albert was talking about co-ops, voluntary.
Same thing. You can even make an argument that credit unions are founded on the same principle. And Ron and Raleigh wrote in and said communism does exist. And he says real communism exists among the Inuit and other Aboriginal peoples.
Yeah, there are Aboriginal people who have no sense of personal possession.
Right.
Everything is And the communist theory has its application, and it has its application in a good way with small communities who know each other.
Yeah, it's trying to upscale it where the trouble comes in.
Those people to whom I am I'm losing words today. Damn. Oh, I did write a note down here when you mentioned Freud. Didn't he believe that a 7.5% solution of cocaine was the answer to alcoholism?
I think so. Isn't that where the Sherlock Holmes thing comes from, too? Oh, I've lost Fancy. We are at the end of the program. Let me thank the five of you who stepped forward and filled 25 of the needed 50 slots in the Thrifty 250. Thank you very much. As I noted, we have massive bills to pay before I get out of here to go and deal with Prism, and hopefully bring that to the Horn family over the next 3 weeks. I'll be back on Monday. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go, beginning with those of you who contribute to make sure that we're here from night to night, and to everybody behind the scenes, on the scene, Lottie in the chat room, Gene and Susan, our news ninjas, our blogger Texas Betsy. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer. He and I have a bunch of work to do in the next few days. I'll tell you more about that maybe later. Thanks to our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. And thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. He has a fundraiser going on and needs your help. He never sends a bill. Every now and then he just says, "Bob, could you ask folks to help out a little bit?" And we try to as well. Thanks, of course, always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org, and all.